and we'll note once Dr. Malott or Miss LaBoy join us. All right, the time is now 8:32 a.m. on July 9th, 2021, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, will you please do a roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Catarino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Gill?
Present.
Ms. LaBoy? Dr. Malott? Ms. Shreve?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Please note that the time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend a discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to the former item at a later time. The board may also reorder the non-timed items. The board does encourage everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find a link on the meeting agenda that is posted on the board's website to complete the survey. We would greatly appreciate any of that feedback. I do want to recognize all the board members for your hard work. You know, each board member spends several hours preparing for each of these meetings, and we do greatly appreciate your time and your effort. I also want to thank board staff who, again, worked tirelessly to get through the preparing us for these meetings, because these have been some record-breaking, lengthy agendas that we have had lately. Hopefully today is not one of those, but they have done a very good job in making sure that we have all of our needs met and simplifying processes, making sure that we're utilizing technology to ease some of the efforts that is required of board members. So thank you very much. I also want to take a moment to thank our board attorney, Ms. Galvin, for all of her support and her guidance and for attending these meetings and helping us navigate some of the matters on the agenda. All right, the attendance of this board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit. To receive credit, listen for code words provided throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning the CE credit, follow the link on the agenda form, and that will again allow for you to report those words, and board staff will be able to produce proof of attendance for you. I'd like to take a moment to welcome Ms. Malice to the board. Ms. Malice is going to be our license specialist, and I apologize if I mispronounced that, but if you would please take a moment to introduce yourself, that would be great.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, I'm Zakiya Malice. I'm the licensing specialist. So I've only been here for 3 days, I believe it is. And previously I was with the Board of Examiners of Nursing Care Institution Administrators and Assisted Living Facility Managers. So I was there for about 5 years. I've been in state employment for almost 15 years. I'll keep it brief. So that's about it.
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome. We are very, very excited to have you. And I know the behavior analysts are looking forward to getting to work with you a little more, because it's my understanding you'll be helping with a lot of our licensing so that Ms. Folks can help with the growth of the psychology licensing. So we are excited to have you guys. Does anybody have any comments or any statements they would like to make to Ms. Malice?
Welcome and thank you. We need your help. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome, and I hope you have a good sense of humor if you're working with the behavior analysts. You're lucky because, you know, Dr. Meyer can be a bit stuffy. So the BCBAs are a little bit more fun.
What did I do? Welcome. Glad to have you. Ignore Dr. Davey.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on board. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Zakiya, welcome. I'm Ramona. Sorry, I missed the first couple of minutes, but I'm here for the attendance sake. So welcome abroad, and be glad to help in any way or answer questions. So, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. All right. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit those persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number of any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02H, the board cannot take any action on matters not listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matters with each other or with the members of the public addressing the board. The only option available is for any matters not listed on the agenda is to instruct staff to place the topic on the future agenda if applicable. Those wishing to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I will call on you. Ms. Poe, are you aware of any request to speak, or Ms. Pakanon?
Not to my knowledge, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'm not.
We'll give everyone just an opportunity if anybody wants to unmute themselves and state their name. Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 5. It's the board council's update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for the board?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. One brief update regarding the Dr. Sade judicial review action that she filed. Each party has filed their opening briefs, the responsive briefs, and the court has contacted us and is looking to set oral argument in the matter for the second week of September. And I will keep you informed of that as we proceed. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Galvin? Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 6, the consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals for items on their consent agenda?
I have one. I will be recusing from one case, Erin Hanks. She's got a hyphen part. I don't remember the hyphen part. The very first one, I think. She's just an applicant for licensure. So.
Perfect. Thank you. Any additional recusals? All right. That one's been noted for the record. A board member may request to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and action. Are there any such requests? I have one. Sure. Oh, yep, Dr. Meyer.
I'd like to request that we discuss E, discussion of Gennaro Huerta application for reexamination.
Excellent. We will pull that one.
What item number is that? Is that under C or D? Where is, could we call it?
It's a retake request.
Letter E?
E.
Got it. Thank you.
And I would also request that we remove the June 4th executive session minutes. And that is just pending some additional information from the executive session with Ms. Pakanon's performance appraisal. And then we'll just, once that's updated, we'll add it to the next meeting. So we won't be discussing it today, but we'll pull it from the vote and then put a revised version of it in the next meeting. Any additional approvals? All right. Hearing none, if there's no further requests, is there a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
This is Steinar. I move that we approve the items on the consent agenda, except for the June 4th executive session minutes, item 6C1, Erin Sierra Hanks Moore, and item 6E, all of the remaining items.
I don't think we need to remove Erin. I'm just recused from that portion. So.
All right. I amend my motion accordingly.
Seconded.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. If we would like to look at consent agenda item number 6CE, Dr. Meyer, you requested for this to be pulled from the consent agenda. Did you want to make some comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So this item is a fourth request for approval to take to attempt the ECCC for the fifth time. At the previous request, Dr. Huerta submitted a training plan for studying for the ECCC. Obviously, that was not sufficient. An amendment or new training plan was not submitted, and I'd like to hear from him on whether he was able to stick to his training plan or what his plan is moving forward to be more successful. So I don't know if I need to request that information from him or ask that he come to the board, but I don't feel comfortable just approving it at this point.
My recommendation that it goes back to the application review committee, and maybe he can appear before them for their next meeting and talk about his study plan. And then we can see it again in the month of August.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. board yes, members, because he is a temporary license holder, the legal advice we had received previously is that because it's a license, it goes to the board. I understand having it go back to the ARC as well, but I just wanted to be sure that that was acceptable based on previous legal advice and ask if that.
So could the ARC at least review it and give feedback, and then it'll come before the board to our next board meeting in August? Kind of following
it, if that's the direction of the board, that's permissible.
Okay. That way, if we had concerns, we could work on it, and then we could see a more fully developed plan.
And I'd be happy to address that in the next ARC.
Perfect. Do we need a motion for that, Ms. Galvin?
Yes, please.
So I would make a motion that we refer the Dr. Huerta's application to the ARC committee for review of training plan, and that he be notified of such.
I'll second.
Embedded in that motion is a request for him to submit an updated study plan. And would you like him to appear at the ARC meeting?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Do we have any further discussion?
I think we just want to also relay that, you know, we want him, this candidate, to be successful. And I think that's our concern, is this is out of, you know, we just want to see him be successful in passing this. And it's been noted that, you know, he's taken it a few times. And I think this is our effort to help him along with that.
Absolutely. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The time is now 8:46 a.m., so we can move to agenda item number 7. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to receive legal advice from the board's attorney. If any health confidential health information is to be discussed, the board and involved parties will meet in executive session to discuss only that information. Agenda item number 7, Ms. Michelson, would you please provide a summary of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll provide an overview as well as some quick background history on her application. This matter is before the board to review Dr. Schwartz's self-report for criminal charges that occurred in May of 2021. Dr. Schwartz is an applicant for psychologist licensure. As the board may recall, Dr. Schwartz initially submitted an application by the board in 2012. That application was denied by the board subsequently in 2013, in part due to Dr. Schwartz's criminal history, which included a DUI and multiple shoplifting arrests. On that initial application, Dr. Schwartz reported having been caught for shoplifting on 5 occasions. Following this license application denial in 2017, Dr. Schwartz submitted a second application for exam and licensure, which the board ultimately approved pending a passing score on the ECCC. In March of 2019, the board was notified that Dr. Schwartz did not pass the ECCC. 1 year later, in February of 2020, the board received Dr. Schwartz's reapplication. An incomplete notice was sent to her as she did not submit the 2 required professional references. While this reapp was pending, last month the board received correspondence from Dr. Schwartz's attorney indicating that she had been charged with misdemeanor shoplifting and criminal damage on May 21st. In review of the police report, which Dr. Schwartz's attorney submitted at my request, it was noted that she was charged with shoplifting several retail clothing items at a Harley-Davidson store, and that the security footage reflected that she could be seen putting several shirts into her purse to conceal them and not paying for these items before leaving the store. With respect to the criminal damage charge, that was in reference to a pair of sandals that were damaged when she attempted to remove the security wiring on them and, when unsuccessful, left the sandals behind. In response to my request, Dr. Schwartz did provide a detailed written statement regarding the events that led up to this incident. Some of this information addresses medical issues, which can be discussed by the board in executive session if determined to be appropriate. According to the court documentation provided, the criminal charges are currently pending in Scottsdale City Court, and her next court date is a pretrial conference, which is scheduled for July 23rd. With respect to her reapp, it is currently not administratively complete at this time, as she still needs 2 professional references and also an updated databank self-query. She did previously submit the names of 2 licensed psychologists for potential references back in May of 2021. Board staff did contact these 2 licensed psychologists, but did not receive a response from either one. Dr. Schwartz was previously granted an extension of time to submit these required items. So all allowances as permitted in the board's rule have been exhausted at this point. My memo to the board does outline options that are available today in more detail. Some of the possible options include denying the application, allowing her to withdraw the app, or issuing an order for Dr. Schwartz to undergo an evaluation such as a psychological eval before making a final determination. Of course, the board may wish to receive confidential legal advice from Ms. Galvin with respect to all options available today. I do see that we have Dr. Schwartz present with her attorney, Flynn Carey. This does conclude my summary, but please let me know if there are any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Michelson at this time?
I have a question.
Dr. Caterino?
I saw that one of the references that she had asked for had previously submitted a reference, but then, and also now that she has 2 new references, is this correct?
Kathy, do you?
Solomon, I saw he had previously submitted one. And then I believe now there are 2 new ones. So I just want to double check.
The ones that she submitted in May and has not received response from either of them. I'm not sure if Dr. Solomon, Ms. Folks may have more information as she's reached out to those individuals, but we would have to look in the file.
Thank you.
Ms. Folks, I don't know if you're on the line and can answer that.
I am. Madam Chair, I'm checking my email at the moment to see see where that stands.
Dr. Caterino, could you direct us to that page where you saw a more recent reference?
Oh, Dr. Caterino, you were muted.
There was a recent request for Dr. Solomon, but then in going through the records, I saw that he had sent one in another time. And then I thought now that she requested references from people she had worked for before, but I think it might have been within the 3 years of her professional work. I just wanted to double check that because it was so many pages, but I can look.
It was done in 2017, so it's old. We would need a more recent reference.
Okay. Thank you.
I found a page on, what page is this? 228, that was 2007. There's so many. This is a big pile.
And I do believe that Ms. Folks did confirm that she has not heard back from the more recent references. Any additional questions for Ms. Michelson?
No.
All right. I'm hearing none. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Dr.
No, Michelson. No, nothing. Go ahead. And then I'll, so you can move us to the next phase.
Okay. Mr. Carey and Dr. Schwartz are joining us today. Will you please unmute your microphones and introduce yourself? And now would be a time to provide any statements that you would like to make. Again, any health-related matters can be discussed and should be discussed in executive session.
Thank you, Chair Davis-Wilson. This is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Schwartz.
Hi, I'm Rachel Schwartz.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, members of the board, I have a few brief comments. First of all, what I would note is that we are at the very early stages of the criminal allegations. As Director Michelson indicated, there hasn't been a substantive court date yet. That's set for July 23rd. At that time, we would receive a potential plea agreement, and we would have an opportunity to engage with the prosecutor. We really don't have an understanding at this point as how the criminal case will resolve. One thing that I do disagree with in the memorandum is, and this is just based on my experience with Scottsdale, is I don't think this case is likely to hang around for a protracted period of time. One of the reasons is that Scottsdale only allows 3 court dates, a pretrial, a case management, and what's called a trial readiness conference before the defendant has a requirement to either take a plea or set the matter for a trial. So I do think it would resolve quickly. I don't think it would be a matter of years. The only time I've ever had a case go that long in Scottsdale City Court is when I've had to take something up to the Superior Court on appeal. I don't anticipate this would be that type of case, but I do think we will have more clarity as to the situation by the 23rd. And so, you know, one option the board certainly has is to hold the matter in abeyance, even if it's for a short period, tabling it so we can get more clarity on the criminal case. You know, another option you do have is the allowing the application to be withdrawn. Ms. Galvin and I, prior to this board meeting, both looked at the statutes concerning the board's statute of limitations. And as I'm sure the board's aware, for anything except generally sexual allegations, there's a 4-year statute of limitations. However, the way that the statute is written appears to apply to licensees and not applicants. I think that while, you know, that there's some interpretation for that statute, under Title 41, which is the Administrative Procedures Act, and under the idea that lawyers and parties can stipulate, if the option was between a denial at this stage and allowing to withdraw or dismiss this without prejudice, it could be brought back, and we would certainly agree that at that time, if she were to reapply, the board could look at this conduct, conduct any of the evaluations it needed to. I think the concern that I have is if the board were to go towards a denial at this stage without the case being adjudicated, you know, that certainly leaves Ms. or Dr. Schwartz with very few due process remedies. In fact, she'd have to essentially appeal or challenge what the board decides, which would create additional adjudication. If the board were to withdraw, however, there's really no need for any type of adjudication. It's something that could be put on hold, allow her to do whatever she needs to do at this stage, and then come back. I think initially our request would be consider tabling this, even if you table it for a short period of time, for a month or two, to both allow her to complete some of the programming that was detailed in her personal statement, and also for her to have the opportunity to see through the criminal process a little further, and then at that point, re-engage. And then the other fallback for us would be a possible withdrawal, with the idea that we would stipulate that upon reapplication, the board could certainly look at that conduct again, and obviously do evaluations that it felt were appropriate under 26308 or 208. I'm sorry. So those would be our requests on this. I know the board, just from my experience with this board and its subcommittees, I know that you read absolutely everything. So I didn't think it was appropriate to rehash her personal statement, the police report, or anything like that. We're always available for questions, but this feels, at least at this stage, we're in more of a little bit of a procedural crossroads. And that's why I wanted to speak to the part that I thought could be most helpful to the board at this stage.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Dr. Catarino.
We could, one opportunity, we could ask for a psychological evaluation, and that might be completed at the same time that the court information would be available. So we could be running that simultaneously, waiting for the court information while she's completing a psychological evaluation.
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Carey at this time?
Yeah. Mr. Carey, this is Dr.
Gill. Mr. Carey, I apologize.
This application isn't complete yet. We don't have the two references. So would it be best just to have this application withdrawn and then the board, consider a reapplication at the appropriate time, and then we don't have to worry about deadlines and the rest of it? Would that be appropriate?
That would certainly be an option that this board would have. I certainly would defer to Ms. Galvin, and I know Ms. Michelson had made some had some concerns about the deadlines because there are a few deadlines that are creeping up. My position would be that you do have the authority because of this, and this is not giving legal advice. This is just my legal opinion as the lawyer for Dr. Schwartz, but my position would be that because there has been this self-report, I do think that the board's decision to hold the application open the way it did is legally appropriate. But certainly, if that was a concern that because we have these other actions, we don't have an administrative completeness, you certainly would have authority, in my opinion, to allow a withdrawal. I've used that in other boards, and it has been effective because it allows the person to come back both with administrative completeness and with the ability for the board to still preserve any of its disciplinary / non-disciplinary options. So yes, that would certainly be an option of the permission to withdraw.
But you don't have any concerns about our receiving those two references that are lacking at this time?
I don't think it's a function of her being unable to get those. I think that this shoplift allegation and the procedural issues that it has created, I think, may have put her in a position where she was holding off to see what the board wanted to do today, so she's not creating work for other professionals. But I don't think that it would be a problem for her to obtain those. I just think it's a matter right now of, you know, do we want to continue to go down the application road if there's going to be an intervening board action? I do note that she did submit an updated NPDB query. I don't know if that's made it through the process behind the scenes that the board administration does, but I know that she did resubmit her her query. So it's not a function of her not being able to do the additional administrative acts. I think that we just wanted to see what the board, get some guidance from the board before we took any further action on this app.
Ms. Shreve?
I would like to ask that we go into executive session for legal advice, and unless Ms. Galvin wants to provide it, I don't know if it's appropriate and open, is I'd like to know what our attorney's thoughts are in regards to our different options and how it would impact us as a board, you know, the pros and cons to each.
And is that a motion?
Yeah, a motion.
And I'll second that. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Ms. Poe, will you please move us to executive session? Thank you. I think we have everybody back. I want to ask one more time, are there any questions for Mr. Carey? Hearing none, I wanted to give an opportunity for Dr. Schwartz. If Dr. Schwartz would like to make a statement, she is welcome to do so at this time. Oh, but Dr. Schwartz, you are muted.
I'm not able to hear her.
Yeah, we still are unable to hear you, Dr. Schwartz. I'm still unable to hear. You may want to log out and log back in so it reconnects the audio. We still can't hear you, Noel.
She's not listed as muted, but obviously she is.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's an audio connection from her.
Can she call in? There you go.
Give her just a moment to join us.
It looks like she just rejoined, but it's still the same issue. Dr. Schwartz, can you call in? I think she's going to try that.
While she's working on this, if board members want to take a comfort break for 5 minutes, we are good to start back up again at 9:40, give her some time to rejoin us.
And Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I'm going to go ahead and take the opportunity to give the first CE code word as well. The first CE code word for attendees is barbecue. Barbecue.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, we can hear you, but hold on 1 second. I just allowed everybody to take a break to 9:40 so that we could give you an opportunity to join. So,
okay.
So, all right, Dr. Schwartz was able to call in. Dr. Schwartz, would you like to make a statement to the board?
Yes, thank you. Hi, my name is Rachel Schwartz, and I just want to thank all of you for giving me this opportunity to try and salvage the situation that I really didn't want to be, I didn't want to put myself in, and unfortunately, this incident has occurred. So I want to thank all of you for letting me have this opportunity. And I want to apologize for disappointing you if you feel like you gave me a chance before and I messed that up. There were some issues leading up to this incident that I believe play a major part in why I did what I did. And I'm not making excuses for my behavior. I'm simply trying to figure out why I act like that. And what I came up with is my grandmother was suffering terribly in hospice. I watched her die for 11 days on a morphine drip with no food or water and literally waste away. It was a horrible, horrible death. And she had broken her hip and she had a heart attack in the surgery when they tried to put her hip back together. It just was not good. And I was very close with her. I've also been having some issues with my kids. I'm divorced and my ex-husband is constantly causing me trouble. And I also have some medical issues that due to COVID, I wasn't able to get my proper treatment until June 10th, where I go into the hospital and I have my bladder stretched and Botox injected.
Dr. Schwartz? I wasn't able to get
it. Yeah.
For details on the medical issues, we would go into executive session, but we do have your written testimony.
Oh, okay. So I understand that this doesn't look good. And I want to do everything I can to help myself and to help my community. And I want to continue working and I want to continue on this path that I've been trying to get my license for a while. I'm doing an intensive program with a gentleman in Michigan. His name is Dr. Terrence Schulman. He specializes in shoplifting and shopping addiction and hoarding and those kinds of behaviors. We speak once a week for an hour and a half on the phone, and I go to groups every day. And there's a chat and text that I do with other people. And I've made some friends around the country that have had these same issues. So I'm not ignoring this at all. I'm fully committed to making sure that this will not happen. And this is not what I want to be going through right now. And I apologize sincerely for my behavior.
Thank you, Dr. Schwartz. Does any board members have any questions for Dr. Schwartz? And again, I'd like to remind you if they are related to her medical conditions that we will need to go into executive session. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Schwartz. I had a quick question that is mentioned on page 40 of our material from you for everyone's reference, that you said, and this is going back a while, but you said that after you graduated with your doctorate in psychology, you worked for the Maricopa County Jail System for 4 years doing testing and assessments. And I'm curious about, it doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about as far as the current arrest, but can you explain how you were doing testing and assessments when not licensed?
Oh, yes. I was doing them under, it was for my postdoc, and I was doing them under a licensed psychologist.
You were on postdoc for 4 years?
I was there for my internship and my postdoc. So Yeah, 4 years total.
Were you doing that part time? The 4 years seems confusing to me.
Well, we had to do 2 years of an internship, which was not full time. And the postdoc was full time. So it was a total of 4 years that I was there. As far as the hours are concerned, I had enough hours to apply for licensure, but they probably were different during, I don't remember exactly how many hours I worked during my internship. I think maybe 20 a week.
Okay, thank you. And then coming back to the more recent issues, you've been under medical care for how long? Psychiatric care for how long?
Dr. Meyer, Dr. Schwartz, in order to answer those questions, we will need to go into executive session.
Just for length of time, regardless of what's conditions?
Yeah.
Okay.
My concern, yes.
Okay. All right, I'll just stop for now.
Dr. Catarino?
No, the part of what he mentioned was I was going to ask.
Do we have any additional questions for Dr. Schwartz? All right, hearing none, the board's going to move into deliberation, and this is a time for the board to discuss the matter. So other participants will need to mute themselves. Does anybody have any discussion, any board members have any discussion on this matter? Ms. Shree.
It was nice to hear that the doctor is, you know, obtaining professional help, you know, mentioned that and is involved in some groups. I do have concern that this is the second time that we have seen this behavior. I mean, it was denied before because of this. There is a pending adjudication, I guess, in the Scottsdale court. That's concerning. I'm just thinking out loud, my other board members, you know, if we feel like if this is same situation, do we not go forward and deny it? You know, is there a thought of, you know, needing of an evaluation? I do think that we want to make sure that I represent, just for those that are here, I represent the general public. I'm not a psychologist, but, to make sure that the general public is being served by someone that has the ability to do so. And so, I just have some concerns about the pattern here.
Additional comments, Dr. Gill.
I also have some concerns regarding this case. Dr. Schwartz, I appreciate that you're in treatment right now. And nevertheless, this isn't this is the second violation. I'm not as convinced, perhaps, as other board members about a psychological or neuropsychological evaluation. To me, the most appropriate course of action is to deny this application. And Dr. Schwartz, you have all the opportunity in the world to rehabilitate yourself, complete your treatment, and then prepare for a reapplication at the appropriate time. With any supporting documents that you can provide in at that time to reapply for licensure. And so I would support a denial of this application at this time.
Any further discussion or a motion? Dr. Meyer?
I would be in support of Dr. Gill's comments.
So do we have a motion?
I make a motion that we deny this claim due to, at this point, a failure to rehabilitate.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Well, I can.
Ms. Shreve, yes.
Just to add, I guess, is, you know, this is the second time around this has occurred. There is documentation in the material that she submitted that, you know, talks about the behavior and what happened. So I think that there's enough concern and pattern here. And I would agree with the denial. I think we have, you know, it's concerning, although I just like to emphasize again, we're glad that this person, you know, the doctor is getting assistance.
All right. And I do agree with that. And I think, you know, as Dr. Gill stated, the option to reapply is still available. And that would be dependent on the applicant's ability to demonstrate that rehabilitation has occurred. All right, we have a motion and a second. Hearing no further discussion, we do need a roll call vote. So Ms. Poe, if you could please do a roll call.
Yes, Madam Chairman,
if I may, just to be clear that Dr. Gill made a motion that we would deny this application for a failure to rehabilitate. There was discussion about this previous conduct. I would ask the board to look at 32.2071.01, and that's the requirements for licensure, and look to see if any of those provisions would apply. This provision requires an applicant to demonstrate to the board satisfaction that the applicant has number three, a professional record that indicates that the applicant has not committed any act or engaged in any conduct that constitute grounds for disciplinary action against the licensee. And number four, has not had a license or certificate to practice psychology refused, revoked, suspended, or restricted by a state territory. So she has been denied in the past by this state. And I believe that if we could have that as part of the motion, that would be helpful.
From Dr. Gill, or does that need to be amended by anybody?
And I would also point out that paragraph B states that if the board finds that an applicant committed an act or engaged in conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action in this state or another jurisdiction, the board may issue a license if they first determine that it's to that satisfaction that the act or conduct has been corrected or monitored. If it has not been resolved before issuing a license, the board can then deny that application based on that grounds if they do not find that mitigating circumstances exist.
Can I make a friendly amendment, or does that need to come from Dr. Meyer?
You could request that there be an amendment.
So I would request that there be an amendment that in our approval for denial that we acknowledge 32.2071.01, A, 3, 4, 5, and then B. So that'd be my friendly amendment.
I do not believe number 5 is applicable.
I mean, excuse me, 3 and 4. So A, 3, and 4, and then B. So I think someone has to accept that.
Yeah, Dr. Gill, do you accept that amendment?
Yes, I do.
And Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
All right, we have amended the motion and second. We do need a roll call vote. Ms. Poe, if you could please call the roll.
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
My vote would be no, and my explanation would be that I would have allowed the applicant to withdraw the application.
Thank you. Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
We have 7 yeses, 1 no. Motion carries.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Carey and Dr. Schwartz, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now move to agenda item number 8, complaint 2101 concerning Carol Basil. Dr. Gill, would you please provide a brief summary of this case for the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a anonymous complaint report regarding Carol Basil, who has a school psychologist credential. This is a part of an initial review. I'm going to refer to Carol Basil as KB and Dr. Joubert as Dr. J. KB is a certified school psychologist through the Arizona Department of Education. She's an independent contractor through Sunlight Center for Change, otherwise known as SCC, in Tucson. The owner is Holly Joubert Saidi. In February of 2021, there was an anonymous complaint filed with the board alleging that KB currently was advertising and misrepresenting herself as a licensed psychologist in Arizona and acting as a forensic supervisor. There was a Facebook ad found in June the 11th of 2020 through SCC, quote, co-parenting for change class run by Virginia Pope, LAMFT, and co-facilitator KB, who is a school psychologist. In March of 2021, Dr. J initially created a Facebook ad posting incorrect credentials to KB as being licensed, implying that she was a licensed psychologist. Once she saw the posting, KB corrected it in association with Dr. J. The complaint itself is as follows. She was accused, KB was accused of misrepresenting herself as a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona. She was reportedly engaged in clinical, supervisory, and forensic work in Tucson, Arizona. The board staff opened this complaint for further investigation. The complaint included a screenshot of a Facebook page dated 6/11/2020 found on the Sunlight website as referred to above. When the SCC website was accessed by board staff in February of 2021, it stated that the co-parenting class was currently run by KB and Austin Guida. KB's school psychology credentials were not found on the website for either February of 2021 or April 21 dates when the board reviewed them. Staff corresponded to KB beginning February the 11th, 2021. KB notified that she may be in possible violation of ARS 32-2084. The statute prohibits the use of words or other misrepresentations that leads the public to believe that the person making the misrepresentation is licensed to practice psychology in Arizona. It is described as a Class A misdemeanor. Complaint reportedly alleges KB holding herself out as a licensed psychologist and forensic supervisor. Board staff requests for KB to provide a written response. Her response, along with response from Dr. J, is as follows. Dr. J submitted a one-page response on behalf of KB, March the 12th of 2021. Dr. J stated that she manages, quote, the postings of our group, unquote. Dr. J's posting for co-parenting class is incorrect credentials for KB as being licensed as a psychologist. When KB saw the posting, it was corrected. Dr. J updated the posting to reflect the change. KB reportedly works as an independent contractor with SCC. She conducts psychological testing. She also provides therapeutic visits to include supervision visits and therapeutic supervision visits for the court under my supervision, making reference to Dr. Joubert. Dr. J said there is nothing prohibiting KB from doing this work as long as there is a distinguishment provided up front with clients at intake. KB acts as a coach to parents who are working on their parenting skills. KB observes child-parent interactions. KB is qualified to do this, given her experience in education, notably in child development. Dr. J submitted the parenting class information page from the SCC website and a notification for court-ordered therapeutic services form. KB is supervised by Dr. Joubert. Staff notes. Board submitted a subpoena for documents April the 21st, 2021. Requesting supervision documents, KB's client list, services specified. There's also a request for an independent contractor agreement that was initiated June the 10th, 2019, that includes an assessment and consultation service. Dr. J and KB were under the independent contractor agreement, were described as separate entities, quote unquote. Dr. J and KB worked together to avoid conflict of interest. Under the IC agreement for contracts, patients are seen at SCC or on an SCC contract. Contractor, that is KB, shall comply with all requests for information. Contractor shall keep calendar up to date, be aware of availability, includes cases, quote, within KB's skill set, unquote. Services to be provided, assessment, treatment, intervention, consultation, therapeutic and assessment services to SCC patients under supervision where appropriate. May also include psych testing, scoring, record review, all services provided based upon medical necessity, best practices related to behavioral health and psychology. Quality of service under the IC agreement, based upon professional standards of the school psychology, APA code of ethics, APA policy statement, or guidelines on forensic psychology. If KB status as a psychologist is withdrawn, contractors shall notify SCC immediately, agreement likely to be terminated. Supervision provided free of charge. Requirements for clinical supervision found in the Arizona Administrative Code pursuant to Title IV, Professions and Occupations, Chapter 6, Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. HIPAA confidentiality applies. Protected Health Information, or PHI, compiled and maintained. May exchange PHI for purposes of providing treatment. The agreement also addressed taxes, benefits, notice to parties, and to include if the contractor is censored by a board or surrender license to practice as a school psychologist. Quality of services continued, including malpractice insurance information and conduct upon termination. The subpoena was served June the 14th of 2021, requesting client files, five of them, in their entirety. The first one was client AA. There was a fitness of duty evaluation. It's believed it was conducted by Dr. J, including a violence assessment. KB conducted evaluation testing, writing at least in part, and collateral interviews. Case number two, client. We're going to call this TC. There was a case activity log. KB services were provided. There was supervision visits, supervisory visits. There were two children involved, both with a DSM-5 diagnosis. Behavioral health services were included. KB, quote, taking over sessions with both kids, given her expertise, documentation referred to, quote, their therapy, unquote. Number three, client R versus A. There was a child abuse issue. KB performed intake, emails to parents, court prep and testimony, discharge summary. There were supervision and therapeutic supervision visits, court-ordered services. We included active feedback from a licensed mental health professional. Note, in the TSV paperwork, TSV is described as, quote, not therapy, but utilizes many of the same techniques to improve parent-child interactions. The TSV treatment plan refers in part to identify issues relating to the disruption of the family measured by observation and therapeutic intervention. Use of the term, quote, a therapist's responsibility was found in the TSV treatment plan. SCC paperwork includes, quote, consent to forensic testing signed by KB. In this case, the case number four, B versus B, there was a discharge summary. There were TSV visitation provided by KB. Father completed what was described as individual anger therapy. KB and Dr. J both signed regarding that progress note. Court prep and testimony, treatment records, court records, order for family therapy. I repeat, quote, order for family therapy. Not clear whether KB or Dr. J performed family therapy. And the last case, F versus M, KB provided, as best as it can be determined, a discharge summary. There were therapeutic supervision and supervision visits, clinical record intake, visitation. There were TSV goals, progress notes. A report was filed. There was billing. Court documents were also included. And that concludes my summary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I believe that we do have KB on the phone with us, Ms. Basil and her attorney, Mr. Hover. If you would please unmute yourselves and introduce yourselves, that would be appreciated.
Good morning, Charles Hover, counsel on behalf of Carol Basil.
Carol Basil.
Thank you. Would either of you or both of you like to make a statement to the board?
Yes, thank you. Just a brief statement. I know there's specifics that probably need to be discussed with Dr. Basil so that you can get the true sense of what she actually does. I think there was some concern, at least in the outset, that Dr. Basil had, under the auspices of her certification as a school psychologist, essentially hung out her shingle and was providing psychological counseling willy-nilly. This is not the case. Her specific duties are those that she performs as part of a team with Dr. Joubert and others at SCC. Based on the referrals from either an employer or the Maricopa County Superior Courts, SCC is charged with providing information to the employer and the courts that would help them in making determinations as to what, if anything, either the litigants should do as part of court orders going forward and not involving SCC, Ms. Basil or Ms. Joubert, or an employer as to what they should consider with regard to going forward with an employee or a potential employee, again, without the participation of Ms. Joubert, Ms. Basil, or SCC. This is a information data gathering process that Ms. Joubert oversees and directs. And at that direction and oversight, Ms. Basil performs certain functions that are standard in the psychological practice for adjunct or collateral help and resources. We have provided various job postings that describe a lot of the kind of duties that Ms. Basil has performed for SCC under the supervision of Dr. Joubert. And that is standard industry-wide. We have also provided an article that describes therapeutic supervision, how it is performed, and its purpose and function. Again, it is something that is standard under supervision by Dr. Joubert and is part of the SCC team in putting together this data and information so that courts can provide appropriate orders and guidance to their litigants going forward. The same with employers. Ms. Basil is fully aware of the limitations that go along with this process. She, in fact, was one who made, as pointed out, the discovery recommendations that things be changed on the website because they were not correct. So there is a definite understanding and effort by Ms. Basil in coordination and conjunction with Dr. Joubert to actually perform as a team with appropriate designation of and distribution of duties within that team process and to the goal for their clients, the court or the employer. This is not a situation where they are providing psychotherapy. Diagnosis doesn't start or come from Ms. Basil. She does not provide treatment as such as defined by your statutes. She is, again, part of this team working at the direction of and under the supervision and auspices of Dr. Joubert. It is a symbiotic relationship, and it is, again, best described as collateral or adjunct to the actual practice of psychology that Dr. Joubert undertakes. With that, I would invite you to specifically discuss parts of the concerns raised by Dr. Gill with Ms. Basil and Dr. Joubert. And I think you will find to your satisfaction that she is not practicing psychology, and she certainly was not complicit in any attempt to misrepresent her credentials. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hover, Dr. Catarino?
I don't know if it's for him or Ms. Galvin. I tried to look up the requirements for a therapeutic supervisor. I found some for California that said only a GED is required, and also to look up requirements for a psychometrist in our state. Are you aware, or Ms. Galvin aware, what the legal requirements are to perform those functions?
This is Charlie Hover. They do not require licensure, either as a behavioral health or a psychologist or even a BHT, particularly when they are, well, they are required to be supervised in providing those functions. And yes, you are correct. California only requires a GED. There's not a specific designation here in Arizona that goes that deep, but we did provide the article from the forensic website that describes what's required there. And again, it is not anything that is licensure or even certification required. It's just
what about psychometrists?
Same. I'm not aware of any specific licensure requirement for psychometrists.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions? And Dr. Meyer?
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Ms. Basil and Mr. Hoover. Question, Ms. Basil, are you contracted with a school or employed by a school?
Yes.
Okay, what school is that?
Pep Tech Charter Schools.
I'm sorry, you cut out there.
Pep Tech Charter Schools.
Okay, and is any of your work done with Sunlight for that school system? Is there a connection between the school and your work for Sunlight?
No.
Okay, so the work you do for Sunlight is not related to any work for a school?
Correct.
Okay. And yet you do represent yourself at Sunlight as a certified school psychologist?
Yes, that is in fact true.
Okay.
I am a certified school psychologist, so I represent my credentials.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions.
Any additional questions? Dr. Malat?
Ms. Basil, all the work that you've done with Sunlight, has it always been under the supervision of your supervisor?
Absolutely. I do nothing without direction from Dr. Joubert. Okay. I am not working independently. I do not cultivate my own clients. I do nothing that is not directed by Dr. Joubert.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. That was my main question.
Any additional questions?
I just had one more. I don't know the status of this, maybe for the attorney, in that she is an independent contractor. I don't know if that, how is that just for financial, or how does that play into this? Because that shows that she's independent. She's not an employee of Dr. Joubert.
Correct. And with that designation legally, there are a lot of different legal obligations with regard to taxes, with regard to direction of duties and that kind of thing. It does not in and of itself represent any kind of representation to the public. It is how the two parties will interact with each other. It is primarily there for tax purposes and to define benefits or the lack of benefits because of an independent contractor as opposed to an employee. If she were to be deemed an employee, a whole host of laws regarding overtime and benefits and that kind of thing would fall into place. Contracts like that, particularly in SCC's situation, are general in nature and all-encompassing. They try to bring in every potential possibility, unfortunately, not geared specifically to each employee and each of their particular duties or participation. You'll see general language in there, but it is always, as I have read it, followed by the phrase where appropriate. So there is this potential, but only where it is going to be appropriate. So as far as setting out specific supervisory duties, it doesn't do that. It just sets the business relationship between the two.
And then I have two very quick questions for Ms. Basil. Number one, the first client file involved, I believe, two different adult psychological tests, the MMPI and 16PF. Well, I'm not sure if that was part of the school psychology training. Did you study those in graduate school? Because those are not children's tests.
Yes. So my training involved the APA approved four semesters, personality testing, intellectuals testing, academic testing, and children's testing, the same courses that APA licensed psychologists would also take. So yes, I was trained specifically and also in projective testing as well.
And then the second one, I noticed some of the notes seem to be similar from week to week, month to month. Did you use like a template when the you reported the notes from the therapeutic sessions? They seemed almost word for word, some of them from month to month.
Yes, they are. We do use a template. And in some cases, you know, the behavior was very similar from one session to the next. So,
okay.
Observing what's going on. But yes, we do report using a standardized template.
So when you do the psychological testing, do you consider yourself functioning as a school psychologist or a psychometrist?
For Dr. Joubert, I am in the capacity of a psychometrist. I am under her direction. Diagnoses come from her. I'm simply giving the test, administering them, reporting the findings to Dr. Joubert to be placed into whatever report or, you know, whatever the function of the evaluation, whatever that purpose was.
And then when you are doing the therapeutic supervision, are the clients told that you're a school psychologist or that you see your function there as therapeutic supervisor?
The word therapy is kind of it's kind of a bugaboo in a way, because the therapeutic supervised visitation is not therapy.
It
begins the conversation with parents and child about what issues there may be in the parent-child relationship. I'm sorry, I've lost a little focus.
Are you functioning there as a school psychologist or just as a therapeutic supervisor that, you know, without any training required?
Well, there is some training required. We receive a minimum of 24 hours, and I went over 24 hours with Supervised Visitation Network, which provides training for this specific purpose. In this capacity, I'm never functioning as a school psychologist with Dr. Joubert, but that, in fact, I'm representing my true credentials, being very representative in a form given to all parties who seek services at Sunlight Center. Everybody is told who I am and what I am. I am my highest degree is an education specialist. I am a nationally and Arizona certified school psychologist. That all is true. And I am always under the supervision of Dr. Joubert.
So I don't recall now when you write the notes or when you add to the psychological reports, are you also putting down psychometrist? Are you also putting down therapeutic supervisor? Or are you just listing school psychologist?
I'm representing Carol Basil, EDS, and typically nationally certified school psychologist is how I do it. I do put the EDS there always.
Because, I think the issue is you're functioning one way, but you have a title that implies something else, you know, because you really are functioning, I think, like a psychometrist and a therapeutic supervisor, which you have the training for. But then you also are using the degree but of school psychology, but not really functioning in that way at Dr. Joubert's office. Do you see?
That's correct.
And I think that's where the confusion is.
Well, okay. If that is an issue of confusion, I can stop saying school psychologist when working with Dr. Joubert. That's easy enough.
Well, you could add those other titles, what you're doing, psychometrist and therapeutic supervisor.
Could do that.
Okay. That I just wanted to clarify this. Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Gill, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, are we going to hear from Dr. Joubert or her attorney or not?
Yes, I was going to, once we were done asking questions to Ms. Basil.
I have questions for Dr. Joubert.
Okay.
I don't have questions for Carol Basil.
Perfect. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Basil? Hearing none, if we could take a moment to have Dr. Joubert and her attorney, Artie Eves, unmute yourselves, introduce yourself, and then now would be a good time to make a brief statement.
Good morning, everybody. This is Artie Eves. Dr. Joubert is here appearing as well. I would just remind everyone that we have sort of an arm's length understanding of what's going on here. Dr. Joubert is not being investigated, so she's not privy to the specifics of the allegations. I think the reading of the investigative report today is probably the most information we've gotten. So she's here. She's been asked to be here to answer questions. She's happy to do that. But I just would remind everyone, she's not under investigation. She's appearing as a witness today. And she may not have immediate command of all of the detailed issues in the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Joubert, can you please introduce yourself? And if you'd like to make a statement, you can, or otherwise Mr. Eve's statement is sufficient.
Sure. My name is Dr. Holly Joubert, and I am a psychologist at Sunlight Center for Change and Carol Basil's supervisor.
Thank you. Dr. Gill, you had some questions for Dr. Joubert.
Yes, and I recognize that you may not be aware of all the, there's a lot of noise on the line. At any rate, Dr. Joubert, I understand you are the owner of Sunlight Center for Change, and that you have a history of supervising staff, interns, and students. Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
And you supervise Jamie Stevenson's PsyD student at the time that she worked for Sunlight?
Yes.
And was she engaged in earning hours as a psychologist?
No, as an intern.
Was she earning hours as a in terms of working towards her licensure as a psychologist?
No.
She was not. Okay. All right. And I reviewed the independent contractor agreement, and I'm on page 93 under the section called quality of services. And it states that Ms. Basil shall conform to APA code of ethics and ethical guidelines for forensic psychologists. And I guess my question is, if she's not acting as a psychologist, why should she be required to conform to the APA codes and to the guidelines for forensic psychology?
So in my work, I conduct evaluations for court, and everything that I do or have somebody do for a case needs to conform to those standards.
Okay. And I guess my final question regards case number 4. It's B versus V. I don't know if you have any recollection regarding that particular case. We can't say full names, so the best I can do is B versus B. I understand in that particular case that the court ordered family therapy. Do you recall that?
I recall that originally as was the case, it ended up being a TSV. We went back and forth with the attorneys on it, so I apologize, but it was a case that was coming in it was misworded on the order. We went back and forth with the attorneys about changing the order, but the case didn't end up moving forward anyway because of some circumstances on behalf of one of the parties.
Okay. And Well, in reviewing the confidential progress notes, it's on page 934 of our materials. There is a reference to, quote, family therapy with mother and children. And on page 935, there's also found in the last sentence of the progress note that's co-signed by both you and Ms. Basil, that says, quote, so I can determine if therapy can begin. So my question is, did you or did Ms. Basil conduct family therapy in this case?
No, intakes were conducted only.
So even though it was court ordered for family therapy was not provided?
No, it could not move forward because of the actions of one of the parties.
Okay, that was not clear in the progress notes. At any rate, okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Joubert, thank you for being here. How often do you provide supervision for Ms. Basil?
We meet for our team meeting once a week, and then we, for an hour, it's generally an hour and a half. And then we actually talk pretty frequently throughout the week on an as needed basis. We talk almost every day and go over, you know, case staffings and what's going on with cases and where things are at so that we can be on the same page.
Okay. Do you keep supervision documentation, supervision notes for
absolutely
all of the meetings?
Yes.
And then we received one fitness for duty evaluation where there's billing indicating what Ms. Basil has done, which included administering psychological testing. There's no, but in the final report, there's no indication of that she was involved at all, that, and only your signature was on there. How do you, is that your standard practice on evaluations?
Not if somebody's, no, not generally. On that case, she sat in on the interview. I conducted the interview and did the majority of the write-up. She assisted with some of the testing and putting that information into the report, but she was not a part of really that assessment outside of that. And she did do one outside interview. She's or like a collateral interview is what we call them.
Okay. Do you, in your evaluations, do you indicate when you've done testing or when someone else has administered the testing?
Yes. Typically we put down if somebody else is involved with doing psychological testing.
And so why not in this case?
I can't, I really don't know. Honestly, it wasn't purposeful. It was honestly probably an oversight.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Additional questions? All right. Hearing none. We will move into deliberations.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Artie Eves. Before we do that, would you mind if Dr. Joubert and I are excused? I had to jump out of a mediation today to appear here because we didn't have much control over the date, but I wanted to present Dr. Joubert to the board. Does anybody object if we step out at this point?
I'm okay with it. I mean, double check that there's no last questions. And then, yes, you guys are welcome to leave. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
Can
you.
I remain?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yes. So yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome to stay and listen in. We're going to move into deliberations anyway, which is a time for the board to speak, board members to speak amongst themselves. So there won't be any additional questions or anything that Mr. Eves will be missing because we'll just be talking amongst ourselves.
Thanks. I know sometimes the group does, even after executive sessions, ask some questions. So I would just ask that no questions be asked of Dr. Gilbert if I'm not here.
Absolutely. We understand that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I don't know if Ms. Basil gave her a statement. She had anything else to say?
Ms. Basil, if you have anything else to add before we go into deliberations, you're welcome to do so now.
I just want to reinforce the idea that I'm working as part of a team for Dr. Gilbert. I am not, in fact, working independently. I do not purport, have never purported to be a licensed psychologist. I always use my appropriate credentials, Carol Basil, EDS, NCSP, Nationally Certified School Psychologist. That is, in fact, true. If that is problematic for this board, I can use credential, you know, I can represent myself in a different way if you prefer, but I am representing what, in fact, my highest achievement has been. But I am not performing school psychology work for Dr. Gilbert. I'm working as her team member, doing whatever she asks. I also would say that Dr. Gill represented the summary of some of the work in the records incorrectly, but that's okay. There didn't appear to be any specific questions about some of that misrepresentation. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. All right, like I said, we will move into deliberations. This is a time for the board members to discuss the case amongst themselves and each other. Everybody else will remain on mute. Dr. Gill, if you would, could you please begin deliberations?
Did what I could to carefully evaluate these 1,100 pages that we had to review. I have to say, I came away impressed with Ms. Basil. She certainly has an extensive background and an impressive skill set. I want to say that that's not the issue before this board, her expertise, but whether or not she's misrepresented herself. I had trouble with some of the terminology in some of the reporting, and I think Dr. Catarino brought that up too. I would be in favor of some kind of statement that would request SCC to be clearer about the role that Ms. Basil plays, whether she's a psychometrist, and to be careful in the use of terms such as therapy and family therapy, and just to clarify and make sure that her role isn't inadvertently misrepresented to the public. And I think when I was asking questions about family therapy, I was under the impression that that family therapy was rendered based upon the review of those progress notes. And I was surprised to hear that that family therapy wasn't rendered. You know, the initial question was, you know, if family therapy, and that's the term that was used, who conducted the family therapy, because the signatures underneath says Ms. Basil, clinician, and then it says Dr. Gilbert, supervisor. So it was not clear who was doing what. So I would be in favor of requesting some clarification in terms of their documentation so that we're clear that Ms. Basil is not operating out of her role as a school psychologist or as a psychometrist in this case. That's what I'd like to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the concern here was whether Ms. Basil was operating as a psychologist. The clarification of supervision by Dr. Gilbert, I think, addresses that there is all of the documentation I saw had Dr. Gilbert signing off on her work, which I think remedies the concern for our board. I do have concerns about her misrepresenting herself as a school psychologist. And the conversation today was very different from in the complaint screening committee, where she was adamant that she could do this work as a school psychologist. And now we're hearing, no, she's a psychometrician these times, but she's a supervisor, a court supervisor at these times, yet she's always signing that as a licensed or as a certified school psychologist. So I think that's a real issue, because I can't read these records and say, oh, here's her role in this place and here's her role in this place. If I sign off as myself as a licensed psychologist, that tells people I'm performing psychology. And so when she says, this is my highest credential, oh, but the public should discount my role in doing that, I think is very unclear. I don't know I think that concern should be passed on to the certification board, but I don't know that there's anything else for us to do.
So, first, yeah, I have two questions. One, I know that we are protecting the word psych and anything after, like, psychology, psychologist. I didn't know that we also protected therapy, because you have occupational therapist, speech therapist.
That's not a protected word.
Okay, so that word could be used. I was referring to Dr. Gill. And then I wondered if she adds what her role is at the bottom of the reports, like psychometrist, and then still put her highest degree, and maybe just put the letters, maybe EDS and CSB, but or something like that, so people are not misled to think she's functioning as a school psychologist. Because I go back to that, my daughter's a family law attorney, a Maricopa County commissioner, and I asked her what the requirements are in Arizona. She said, we have somebody just a high school degree or GED do supervision. It's a common thing. So, she's not really doing the functions she's providing are not totally, you know, her school psychology informs that and maybe can do it better, but she's not doing anything that she's not allowed to do legally. And she is supervised at all times, it looked to me.
Dr. Ma?
Yeah, again, we have to remember, this is coming to us as a title violation, and we are trying to determine whether Ms. Basil is functioning independently as a psychologist. The term certified school psychologist becomes problematic when you are outside a school setting and you're not licensed. So that is problematic. So I think we need to issue a letter to Ms. Basil indicating that, that title has to be used in the settings that it's appropriate, and it's not appropriate, even under direct supervision. A lot of the functions that she is well within her scope. She's been trained doing the personality test. I was part of a program in the early 90s where we did teach all our school psychologists. They even took marriage and family therapy classes. They did. So all of her functions is well within her scope of practice and training. She's been trained in those areas and under supervision, and she's got the right training. And but titles can be misleading, so we would urge her to be cautious. She made the correction when there was a mistake on her website. And I think I don't see any further action. And, we spent a lot of time on this case. We need to caution her. It is a title violation. She's not a licensee of this board, and we need to caution her. And, So,
Dr. Mala, I agree. And I want to just provide some clarification just so that Ms. Basil, because I agree with the thought process of representing like my highest credential. Like, I understand you've worked very hard for that. I understand why that is a desire. The challenge is we have to look at it from the perspective of the general public.
And what does the public perceive the services that they're getting as being? And that's where it becomes a challenge. And so that's kind of the direction that as we kind of talk about the concerns related to representing yourself as a school psychologist, but not providing those services, is really the perception to the public. I agree that at the end of the day, the school psychology certificate is outside of our jurisdiction. I tend to agree with Dr. Malott, maybe just a letter. It's non-disciplinary. It's not intended, but just to provide some guidance on what could assist in not being in this predicament again in the future. And I would also, and part of this is probably because I am an employer and I do a lot of research in kind of working with employment laws and stuff. And I am concerned about the independent contractor status. I think the independent contractor status isn't just a tax delineation. It is clearly set by the IRS as, does the individual have the capability of working without direction? And so it's almost like you're saying, well, yeah, they have the ability to work without direction, but they're being supervised. And it's like, well, you kind of can't have both. Either they're being supervised and that's clear in the employment relationship, or they're able to operate independently without direction. And that for me is a big distinction beyond just a tax category. Whether or not that's within our jurisdiction, I mean, it isn't, but since we're having the conversation, since it's been raised that classification is of concern, I would highly advise that both parties, both Dr. Jabbar, who could get in trouble, you know, for part of the arrangement, and Ms. Basil, review that and maybe consult with an attorney that specifically works in that area. In you know, behavior analysis, we do a lot of tiered supervisory services, and there's quite a bit of federal guidance that's been provided that specifically says if you are supervising an employee, that individual cannot be an independent contractor. They have to be an employee. So again, that's not really within our jurisdiction, but from the knowledge that I do have, I would just encourage both parties to consider reviewing that arrangement, just because you may find that arrangement might be a part of what's leading to this predicament, or may lead to future predicaments. So again, it's nothing we would do about at this level, but from my personal knowledge and experience and expertise, I'm with Dr. Catarino, that kind of raises a little bit of that arrangement seems to be a little bit problematic. And I would just encourage you guys to explore a more formal legal analysis of that arrangement to help prevent some of this in the future. But those are my thoughts. I agree. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Malott helped clear this up for me, as she always does. It is a title violation, right? So there's an exception for licensure as a school psychologist when you're contracted with a school. Ms. Basil is not working in a school, so that exception for school psychology does not apply here. So her using any word of psychology or psychologist, even if she is supervised, is a title violation. So I take back that this doesn't fall under our board, because she's using the term psychologist, and there's not a exclusion that applies to her condition when she's contracted here. So I would use a letter, whether it's cease and desist or, yeah. She can't use the word school psychologist if she's not working in a school.
Other thoughts or discussion?
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion.
Dr. Malott?
I move use the appropriate title. I don't know if that's really a motion. What should my motion be, Ms. Galvin? It's kind of issuing a letter to Ms. Basil regarding appropriateness of credentials in the right settings.
So I believe that based upon what I'm hearing from the board members, that you are finding a violation of 32.2084(c)(1), which is prohibits a person not licensed pursuant to this chapter to use a designation psychological or psychologist. The facts that would support that is her use of the term certified state or national certified school psychologist when she is not working in a school setting.
The certified school psychologist, the NCSP is a honorific designation. It is not a license issued by a board, and I don't think we can restrict like a degree. She has an EDS in school psychology. So
I think she could put the degrees in the NCSP, I think. Okay.
But the certified school psychologist, which our board has specifically designated, that can be used in school settings.
All right. And then that would be the basis for an issuance of a cease and desist.
Could it be a letter of information, or do we need to make it a cease and desist?
Typically, when we find that there is a title violation, it is precedent. Mostly of that a cease and desist order would be issued.
Okay.
That's my motion.
I'll second it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So the NCSP is, I can use NCSP, but that's, if I spelled it out, it's nationally certified school psychologist. Is that problematic or not problematic?
I think it's best to use the you know, like we do EDS, NCS.
And just put NCSP. Okay. All right.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I'm sorry. Who was the second?
Me.
Okay, Dr. Katerina. And do we need a roll call on this, Ms. Galvin?
You do not.
All right. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Dinah opposed.
All right. We have the motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Basil and Mr. Hover for being here today.
Thank you.
All right. We will now move to item number 10. discussion, consideration, possible action relating to renewal applications submitted by Brecken Blades. Agenda item 10. Ms. Poe, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the board. On May 26, 2021, the board office received Dr. Blades' psychologist application for license renewal and noted that she answered yes to question number 15 of the renewal application, which asks, have you ever been sued or prosecuted for an act or omission relating to your practice as a psychologist? She did provide an explanation that there is a civil action lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court. The lawsuit does name Dr. Blades and several other defendants. The case is currently pending, and the most recent motion, the motion to dismiss, was filed on May 20th of 2021. But again, the case is still pending. Dr. Blades did provide copies of documentation pertaining to the case, which board members do have access to. Board staff has not processed Dr. Blades' renewal application. We're requesting direction from the board. And Dr. Blades is in attendance for the meeting today. I'm not sure if she would like to make a statement or just available for board member question. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you. Dr. Blades, would you like to make a statement?
No, I don't have a statement, but I'm happy to answer questions as needed.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Blades? Hearing none. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Dr. Blades, for being here. my understanding is that there was contact between your office and the complainant to schedule an intake assessment, and that was it, that nothing was actually ever scheduled or no services were provided?
Well, so he did come in for the intake. It was scheduled. However, immediately upon coming into the room, he informed me of the suit that he was filing and handed me paperwork. So at that point, I terminated our meeting and really no services were provided, but he did come to the office.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
Any additional questions?
I'd like to make a motion to.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I was going to make a motion. You beat me to it, Ramona.
Dr. Millett.
Just making the motion to approve the renewal.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Blades, for being here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
All right, we will move to agenda item number 16, the discussion, consideration, and possible action on behavior analytics services, consumer information video. Agenda item 16 will be with Ms. Bronald. Welcome back, and thank you for your work on this project. Ms. Pacanon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Certainly, Madam Chair. This is mostly for the benefit of our guests today. As the board has been involved in this project, seeing this project unfold over the last several months. So Elizabeth was formerly a student intern for us. She graduated from ASU's School of Nursing in the Compliance and Regulation Program. And as for her internship, she was required to complete a instructional video for consumers of psychology services, which she did so very successfully. And we were able to engage her on a contract basis to continue with us for purposes of developing essentially the same video for consumers of behavior analytics services. So we're here today to see the finished project. And so I'll let Elizabeth cue it up and show us what she accomplished.
All right, I'll share the video right now.
Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners protects the health, safety, and welfare of Arizona citizens by licensing and regulating psychologists and behavior analysts. On our website, you can find information about licensing, complaints, and practice laws. This video addresses how the board protects those receiving behavior analytics services. What is a behavior analyst? A behavior analyst is a person who is licensed to practice behavior analysis, defined as the use of behavior analysis to assist a person to learn new behavior, increase existing behavior, reduce existing behavior, and emit behavior under precise environmental conditions. Behavior analytics services are drawn from data and evidence. A board-certified behavior analyst, or BCBA, is a graduate-level certification in behavior analysis. Professionals certified at the BCBA level are independent practitioners who provide behavior analytics services. The purpose of being licensed is to protect the public from harm by enforcing standards that limit the practice to qualified individuals who have demonstrated the qualifications and competencies of a behavior analyst through education, work experience, and certifications. As someone receiving behavior analytics services, you are entitled to certain rights. You have the right to effective treatment. Behavior analysts have the responsibility to advocate for the appropriate amount and level of service provision and oversight required to meet the defined behavior change program goals. You have the right to a safe treatment environment. A safe treatment environment is free from services that are unnecessary or unsafe. An unsafe environment may include a behavior analyst engaging in behaviors that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. You have the right to confidentiality. Behavior analysts have a primary obligation and take reasonable precautions to protect the confidentiality of those with whom they work or consult. You have the right to proper documentation, records, and data. How do you know whether to file a complaint? You should file a complaint when unprofessional conduct by a behavior analyst is alleged to have occurred. If you are unsure about filing a complaint, or if you need more information, you can look here on our website. When filing a complaint, you want to ensure you are filing with the correct board. The Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners specifically handles cases involving BCBAs. The board does not handle cases involving registered behavior technicians or board-certified assistant behavior analysts. RBTs and BCABAs are certified through the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, or BACB. If you are unsure about where to send a complaint, you can reach out to Jennifer, our deputy director, for more information. Here you can perform a license search to confirm your care provider is a licensed behavior analyst. If you do not find the name you are looking for, you can reach out for more direction. When should you file a complaint? File as soon as possible. With few exceptions, the statute of limitations for filing a complaint is 4 years. What happens when your complaint is received? When a complaint is received, it is first reviewed by the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts, or CBA, composed of 5 licensed behavior analysts, 2 of whom also serve on the board. After review, CBA will make a recommendation to the board regarding a resolution for the complaint. The board may accept, reject, or modify the CBA's recommendation. When the complaint is sent to the full board for consideration, you will again have the opportunity to address the board. While board meetings are public, your identity and health information is kept confidential. What happens after the complaint is reviewed by the board? The board action may include dismissal, issuing non-disciplinary action, or ordering corrective or disciplinary action. The board's past actions can be found on the website under Board Investigations. If you have any further questions about filing a complaint, feel free to reach out. The board is always here to help.
Excellent. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Just outstanding. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, we are so pleased to have accomplished both of these projects, and we have not posted the previously approved video specific to psychology, only because we wanted them to be posted at the same time so there wouldn't be any confusion or just sort of this glaring omission of one video while the other one was there. But we will get those posted on the website very soon. And I know that there are some opportunities coming up in the near future where we will, so I get to share this these resources with a broader audience. So I will brief the board once I have an opportunity to do so.
I had just one comment. There was one piece in there where we reference Ms. Michelson as the deputy director. Do we need just to, you know, as if we're hoping that this will continue for, you know, decades to come as Ms. Michelson moves on to someday be in charge of bigger and better things, do we want that to just say deputy director so that we're not constantly editing her, the name that is attached there?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, I can respond to that. You know, we did have a little bit of discussion around, you know, how specific do we want certain pieces of information to be, and that was certainly among them. And so, you know, we tried to strike this balance between, you know, making this process seem not seem daunting or intimidating. And so we, you know, decided we'll personalize it a little bit. Only because the editing is so, with the software that we acquired to create this video, the editing is so simple and so easy to do. So while, you know, I'm trying to hold Jennifer hostage as long as...
I know, that's what I was thinking. Now she can't leave. That's a great plan.
Right. So, yeah, it's a quick and easy change. So, yeah.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Ms. Pakkinen, thank you. And thank you for all of your work, Elizabeth, and, you know, for this video. I'm just wondering, when it is published, maybe if we could send letters to all of the academic program directors for these programs, informing them. This is such a great resource for students. And, you know, so.
Yes, excellent idea.
I agree. And I think also notifying the professional associations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a really very good job.
Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I would like to go ahead and give out the next CE code word. The next CE code word is independence.
Excellent. All right. Thank you again, Ms. Bernald, for joining us. We appreciate all of your hard work. We will now move to agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to reapplication for exam and licensure from Christine DeSantis-Colas. Agenda item number 11 is for you, Dr. Meyer. You are the lead on this reapplication. Will you please summarize it for the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Santos-Collis had submitted a reapplication. Her application is complete. The reason it's being brought before the board is because she requested accommodations for testing to take the ETPP. There was a supporting letter from a provider, and she's just requesting extended time. If you have any questions, I can go into more detail.
Does anybody have any questions?
Could you confirm that the amount that they're asking for extra time, but did you say how much? Is that the one? I had a note. Somebody didn't say the amount.
I don't believe there was an amount in this one.
Yeah, that was my question. Now, so who makes that decision? Because it was based on a potential medical reason, reason.
Well, and this is going to come more into play a couple agenda items later. What can and can we not allow as far as accommodations go for testing centers? I mean,
in the past, we've often seen the recommendation come with a medical documentation, you know, for either time and half or double time. Those are the two that we've seen most often. And it all depends on the circumstance and the reason for the accommodation. Since there was no specifics, we could do the standard and do a time and half. They can always come back and say they don't like it and request more and provide further documentation.
Yeah, neither the applicant nor her provider indicated any time. Just
we could do a time and half, which is the very standard accommodation.
So I would make a motion that we approve the application with accommodations for time and a half to take the ETPP.
If I could make a comment first, I'm sorry to interrupt. I remember being a member of the ARC committee and reviewing this case. And although this is a technical point, I think it's still an important one. There was a reference, it's on page 15. And I'm sorry, it was corrected. My mistake. I'm sorry for interrupting. My mistake.
No worries. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. We will move to agenda item 12, discussion, consideration, and possible action on application for behavior analyst licensure for Matthew Ryan Tapia. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on this application. Will you please provide a summary to the board?
Yes, this application comes to the board because we failed to have a quorum to be able to approve this application in the CBA. I've reviewed the application in its entirety. The individual, Mr. Tapia, fits the requirements to become a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona, holding his BCBA since 2018, also receiving supervision in the state of California. I would move that this be approved and that he receive his license from the state of Arizona. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'll second that. Any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Agenda item number 13, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to reapplication for exam and licensure and request for testing accommodations for Thomas Barber. Dr. Meyer, you are the lead for this reapplication. Will you please summarize it for the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Barber is reapplying after failing the ACCP. He is asking for accommodations and has an accompanying treating provider that did testing that is supporting this. Now, he is asking for double time, for extended time to take it. Also requesting a private testing room and a smaller testing screen. I don't know that we can make those recommendations or if the testing center can accommodate those.
Does Madam Chair, committee member, or board members, this is Kathy, if I may. I recently, just like last week, received a new ASPPB accommodations and comfort aid descriptions document from ASPPB regarding what can be done. I just uploaded it for you under number 13, if you'd like to look at it. These are the straight from ASPPB, what they can and can't do. If you refresh Google Drive, Google Drive.
Can you summarize it?
Yes, I would be happy to. The accommodations, they can, now he's requesting extra time. The extra time options are 1 hour, 30 minutes, double time, and time and a half. And double is, of course, doubling the 4 hours it takes, or 4.25 hours it takes to complete the exam. There is the option of a separate room. There's separate room and lip speaker, separate room and may move, separate room and read aloud, separate room and reader recorder, separate room and recorder, separate room and sign language interpreter, separate room and snacks, separate room. They can get a trackball mouse. They can have a water bottle. They can have screen magnification only, a software application that displays the font beginning at magnification of 200%, a 20-point font and greater. I do not see here that there is the option of a smaller monitor.
I think that if the board is so inclined to grant this request for accommodations, I would urge you to do so. And then either the applicant can work with the testing center, or they can contact the board for information. And we can see if we can work on the smaller screen request, because that is consistent with one of the diagnoses that would justify a modification.
All right. Yeah. I'll make a motion that we approve the request.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. We will now look at agenda item number 17. I skipped a bunch. Hold on. Agenda item number 14, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the out-of-state telehealth practice registry established at ARS 36-3606. Ms. Pacanon, will you please provide a summary to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just a summary of where this the implementation of this registry stands. I did provide an update relative to where we are with the rulemaking. We should have that filed very soon. Our contracted rule advisor has been on vacation, but when she returns, I think we will have that in place fairly quickly. It is an exempt rulemaking, so that very much expedites that process. And I wrote about sort of this collaborative effort that several of the board executive directors are doing, given, you know, this is a significant policy development. And so many of us have decided to work together, and in doing so, you know, find some, I think, some consistency and some best practices along the way. What I wrote about in the memorandum, I do need to provide an update. We're sort of taking a slightly different course. Instead of doing intake through a fairly informal process or a strategy, which would be a Google form. Some of the executive directors, myself included, have decided to reach out to the Department of Administration and some of their technology experts to create a more professional or formal intake portal. And we have created a mock-up of what that we think that could look like. And we hope to hear very soon confirmation that we will be able to do the registry intake through that process. I'm hesitant at this time to run those applications through our new system because I don't know what the magnitude will be. I simply don't know what the quantity will be. And so, you know, until we understand what that looks like, I don't want to do that because it will be an extra cost associated with that. So I'm looking for some ways to get this registry implemented without a huge fiscal impact to this agency. What I want to emphasize is the fact that with this bill, we didn't receive any sort of increase in our appropriation or any permission to dip into our fund to cover the cost of implementing this registry. What I anticipate I will be doing is with our next budget request for fiscal year 2023, asking for some permissions or increased appropriation so we can, you know, we can manage this registry appropriately. That is my summary, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I guess in terms of timing, what I'm hoping is that we have the registry up and running by the end of this month, assuming that, you know, the technology to do so is in place.
Thank you, Ms. Pacanon. Do we have any questions? Hearing none, we will look forward to your next update at the next meeting. Let's move to agenda item number 15, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding licensure and regulatory issues relative to COVID-19. Ms. Pacanon, will you please provide us an overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just that the governor a week ago had rescinded a number of executive orders that were issued during the early months of the pandemic and the state of emergency. Many of those, or possibly all of those executive orders, there were a series of them, they were targeted at specific issues or industries, if you will. So now that those have been lifted, the only one that we sort of marginally affected this board was one that you may recall, it was number 2020-17. It specified or directed boards to allow licensees to complete continuing education online if the boards didn't already do so. And so we looked at that and decided that would have no impact on this board because our licensees, both professions, have the latitude to complete their continuing education requirements remotely or online, as opposed to in person. The other tiny piece of that executive order that impacted our board was the opportunity to establish a provisional license if applicants had met all licensure requirements, with the exception of passing the required examination. The basis of which was if they couldn't access, you know, if they couldn't go to a testing center, if the testing centers were closed and no examinations were offered, then that provisional license would be an option. And as I recall, we issued that information to the small pool of our temporary psychologists, temporary licensed psychologists, and offered them the opportunity for a provisional license. I believe only two individuals even accepted or demonstrated any interest in that provisional license because they were already holding a temporary license with us. So the rescinding of that executive order really doesn't have an impact on this board because it so minimally impacted us anyway. So I hope that makes sense, but let me know if anything that I said was unclear.
Do we have any questions for Ms. Peckman?
Just one other update to this matter. What I've learned is that the Board of Nursing has requested that the Governor's Office provide at least 3 weeks notice, advance notice of the lifting of the emergency, given that the board, that particular board, made a series of licensure waivers in order to, you know, assure that there was nursing services available, both for purposes of testing and, of course, vaccinations. And assuming that the governor's office will honor the nursing board's request, I believe we will have a period of time where we can notify our temporary license holders of the lifting of the emergency, inform them of the language in the two statutes that provides for a period of time for licensure exemption, and then notify them of the registry opportunity, which will, I hope, be in place by that point in time. And of course, the psychologists will be reminded that if they are eligible, they may want to look at SciPact as an option to continue practicing via telehealth.
Thank you. Any questions? Right, hearing none, thank you, Ms. Peckman. We'll move to agenda item number 17, discussion, consideration, and possible action on proposed modification to continuing education audits. Ms. Peckman, would you please provide the board a summary of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. So historically or traditionally, what we would be gearing up to do right now would be to conduct a series of continuing education audits. As we all understand and recognize, we have to do this process through largely US mail, email. It's an enormous amount of effort to facilitate the audit process because the current management system that we use simply doesn't present that functionality to us. What board staff has discussed is that we see that there's an opportunity to implement what we think is a better strategy approximately 6 months from now. When we transition to the new management system, we will be able to conduct audits entirely through that system and circumvent this more labor-intensive and expensive process that we have historically followed. We see the potential that we can do audits in a more timely fashion. We may be able to increase the percentage or the threshold of audits that we're able to perform because technology is going to better facilitate that for us. Just to sort of explain that in fewer words. And to give credit to Ms. Poe, she describes it as, you know, we have the opportunity to work smarter and not harder. I also think that, you know, the board may want to give some thought to the fact that maybe it isn't the best use of our time and our resources right now, given, you know, what's occurred over the last 15 months, 16 months with the pandemic. Do we really want to be focusing auditing licensees' completion of continuing education when, you know, those professionals may have struggled just to, you know, try to maintain, you know, a patient load and, you know, provide adequate care to their patients? It may be that, you know, many of our professionals had to put continuing education compliance on the back burner while they focused on more urgent needs. So I offer that suggestion to the board for consideration. And as an enhancement to this conversation, if you'd like, I can show you a short video that our new platform administrators prepared for us. What I wanted to show you was some screenshots that would help you envision how the new system will make the auditing process so easy to facilitate. We didn't get screenshots, we actually got a video. So if you have the appetite to see another video, I'm happy to share that. But in the meantime, I can answer questions as well.
I'd love to see the video.
Can I just ask one quick question? What did you mean by that some of the psychologists may not have had time to take their courses? Are you suggesting that they don't have to meet the requirements? I'm trying to understand what you meant by that.
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve, it's possible. I mean, we don't have any evidence of this, of course. We have had in place since the beginning of the, since the first wave of waivers, if you will, we did establish an opportunity for licensees to, you know, reach out to us and ask for extensions of time. I've received a number of those, and of course, everyone has been granted. We're just concerned that there may be, you know, professionals out there who are, you know, maybe they didn't see the email, the notification that this opportunity existed. You know, maybe they're just sort of you know, in an isolated kind of practice situation, this is an afterthought. This may be something that they just simply haven't, you know, had the time.
I guess I don't understand. What is the end point? The end point is, even though they didn't get it, they still have to meet it, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's kind of a slippery slope to go on as a justification.
Yeah,
the better justification that we have a new system, we can wait. We screwed once in 2 years, and so I would maybe prefer to stick to that.
Ms. Shreve and members of the board, this is Ms. Poe. So I process and review all of the renewal applications, and we did start about a year or two. We started with the Auditor General's office had us start reviewing in more detail the CE submissions that licensees submit with renewal. So I do now add those all up, make sure that they have the required numbers. I don't do an in-depth review because they're not required to submit certificates for renewal, just they're required to list all of the courses, the number of CEs. So those are all tallied with each renewal. And if I find one is deficient, I do reach out to the licensee to have them submit additional CE or make up the CE. So no renewal is processed without at least the proper CE documentation that's needed for renewal. But there are extensions in place that licensees can request if they are going to be unable to meet the requirement for renewal.
No, I appreciate that. It just sounded from what was being said that we were just not going to worry about it. And I just, that's not, I think, our intent or my, you know, I think they need to meet requirements. So, all right. Thank you.
And just for clarification as well, the current CE auditing process has been the same even when we were doing renewals April 30th of every other year, right? So this has been, so it makes sense that now would be the time that you guys would be doing the audit coming out of the month of which that you would have been doing the renewals. Well, now we do the renewals monthly. And so kind of an ongoing audit process to me makes more sense than sitting down and, you know, having a prescribed time, arbitrary. It made sense under the old renewal cycle, but I'm not sure it makes sense under the new cycle.
Madam Chair?
Katerina, yes.
Did Ms. Poe, did you find that many people are not getting the correct number of CEUs? Because I think that it was very available to do it online.
Yeah, so, I don't know why we wouldn't.
Dr. Katerina and board members, no. Occasionally, I will find that what the case usually is that the current e-licensing platform is not user-friendly, and the licensees will have difficulty in entering the data. So possibly there'll be 5 or 10 CE units deficient. I email them. They then submit the materials to me, and I upload it to the portal. So 99% of the time, it was just user error because our portal is just not easy to navigate.
And this, I just want to make a point from an equity standpoint. Yes, online is available, but not every psychologist has access to online. And when we couldn't travel, that can be an issue. So the fact that we have an extension in place is a great alternative. So we cannot just assume because things are online. We have many areas on the reservation where there's no online access. So.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. All right, Ms. Pacnon, it looks like you were able to get the video pulled up.
Yes, everyone can see the screen.
Hello. In this video, we will show you how a licensee will update their continuing education records in Thentia Cloud System using the licensee portal. This is our demo environment, and we'll be using all of Tree today as our sample test case. And this is the dashboard for Olive Tree. She is already logged into the system, and she can see some basic information. Over here, she will click on Continuing Education. And this is where she'll see the current CE period, and then it says the status is open, and she can view it. Here, there is the continuing education summary. For the purpose of this demo, it's been configured to indicate that 20 hours are the minimum required per year and that she hasn't submitted any. And so there's no activities down here. Of course, the number of hours will be able to be configured for your organization's requirements. Now, I want to take you to the side of the workbench, which is the staff side of Thentia's platform. Into the learning module. You can see here the learning module is here. I've already called up Olive Tree's profile, and you can see in this table that there are no units or hours that have yet been completed. If we click into this record, we see that there's zero, the status is open, just as it said in the portal, and there are no activities yet. Let's go back to the portal. Here we will add new records. Here we can provide the activity provider. If your organization has a set list, we can configure that for you. Or it can also be a free field if they want to put in any activity provider. We will choose activity provider A. Then they can also fill in the activity. These might be things like attending a course, self-study, writing a scholarly article, and other types of activities that your organization allows. We can also configure the category of continuing education. So if you have categories such as ethics or health and safety, this can also be a drop-down menu that is added. Here we will put the date of completion. We will just use yesterday. And we'll put the number of hours as 5. We'll save it.
Now here you see it takes you back to the summary page, and now it shows still the minimum hours required is 20, the total that's been submitted is 5, so there's 15 remaining. Now let's go back to the workbench. If we go back here, we might have to refresh it. We'll close the record and open it up again. And now you see that there is 5 professional development units that have been entered. If we go down here to the connection about activities, we will see that now there's an entry and it matches the activity type, the hours, and everything that Olive Tree has put in. And the same thing will happen as she puts in new records. It will instantly be reflected in the staff side. If we go back to PD plan, if you do an audit, you can select for review and say selected, and you can select the review date. We'll choose today. If it was mandatory that they had to upload proof that they attended a course or they completed the activity that they inputted, the file would be here. There's nothing here at this time, but if there was, you would be able to click on it and verify that they did actually complete the activity that they said they did. If we go back to the PD plan, you can configure your statuses here based on your process. This one is open. You could have closed, submitted. You can have approved as well if that is your process here. We can add that to the drop-down menu. And then you will save the record and close it. And then there'll be a summary here, and it will say the status that you chose. We hope that this is helpful in understanding how the continuing education portal and the learning module within the workbench operates. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peckman. I have a lot of appreciation for that because I can only imagine the format in which you guys get the audit documents between mail, email, attachments that don't open, Dropbox shares. Like, I could just only imagine the inconsistencies there, and it looks like this will resolve a lot of those inconsistencies, which will lead to better efficiency in the process. So thank you for sharing that. Dr. Malat.
Ms. Packenden, I'm just wondering, so I think you'll be able to record your activities during the entire period, those 2 years. But since it's not mandatory to upload your certificates, I'm wondering, say if that person is picked for an audit, could they go back after they've been picked for an audit and upload their certificate? So they don't have to recreate.
Yes, Madam Chair, Dr. Malat, they can indeed. So we have an incredible amount of latitude to customize the system to behave the way that we want it to. So, I wasn't sure if you caught every instance or inferred in certain instances that, what was being demonstrated was just, simply one set of requirements that, she wanted to show in the video. But we can, you're correct, we can allow licensees to log in at any time during the their cycle, their active cycle, to record anything, to go back and upload after the fact. We can make whatever business rules that we want with the system. So I think that maybe we want to give that some thought and maybe present an outline for consideration of how we want this module to behave. And then the other piece that I think that we want to talk about too, if we are thinking about this, consistent ongoing audit process, how do we want that to look? We have appointed a committee, of course, in the past where this committee's work is very intense during a period, a specific period in a 2-year cycle, but then, months go by with no work. So I think that's the other decision that we need to make is how do we create one of those subcommittees, and how do we make sure that their workload is manageable when those individuals are serving on ARC and serving on CSC? So those are the kinds of things that I think we still need to work through.
Thank you.
And nothing is mandated in our statutes, correct?
Madam Chair, you're correct, Dr. Malott. The rule language states that the board may perform audits. So there's nothing that is prescriptive in that language that I think, this board would find, unfortunate or that you wish you didn't have. You have a great deal of latitude for how you want these audits to look and how the process what process should be followed and what requirements need to be in place.
It's kind of one recommendation I have. Maybe we could do it quarterly rather than monthly, like we do ARC and CSC, and be a rotational kind of event. And so if you do it quarterly, you still do that percentage, which is not prescribed in statute from reading of your material. So we could do it lower or higher, but like a licensee, some months after graduation in May you're going to see a surge, and then some months there's a lot more September babies, so we'll see more applications in that third cycle, because there are months of the year where more people are born, so we have more licensees. So but if you do it quarterly and we rotate it around where everybody serves one term, so it'll be like, say, maybe three cycles. And 3%, we don't need to increase the percentage, So I don't know. I think y'all can come up with a good plan. Having served on that for 10 years, I don't know how long I've served on that committee, so.
So Dr. Malott, does this excite you as well to see the technology and the—
Yeah, I do. I want to upload my certificates the day I get it so I don't have to worry about it, and I'm done as I keep completing. I'm really, really excited about that.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was hoping that those of you who are licensed by this board and have struggled with the current system, that you found what you saw in the video to be vastly better. I was interested in hearing that feedback from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great addition, and I've seen it done in other, but I think just keeping track of, I think the licensees are going to love that feature.
Yes, and Madam Chair, I hope you also caught the mention of how the, if there are specific requirements within the total number of units, how that's entirely customizable. So obviously when the system launches, we will have the requirements specific to ethics. And then when we have the rules revised to include the diversity and related topics, requirement, the jurisprudence requirement, those can be added in whenever we determine that the effective date has been established, which would be adoption of the rule changes. So we could go in and make that change without having to, submit a service ticket to someone with an undetermined period of time before it's actually adjusted and implemented. So, just sort of having that, being that nimble and having that flexibility is very exciting to those of us who will be administrative users.
And I think we should mimic the rule language, because we say if you do like research, this can count for 10 hours of attending board meetings. So we could put that in, this is a board meeting. And so you cannot do 20 of that just because you went to 20 hours of board meetings. So.
Yes, indeed.
Any other comments? All right, hearing none, we will move to agenda item number, oh, I lost my spot again, 18. And that's going to be discussion, consideration, and possible action on ECPP Part 2 as licensure requirement for temporary license holders who apply for an unrestricted license on or after November 1st, 2020. Ms. Pacman, would you please provide a summary of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. This item is coming back to the board. You'll recall at last month's meeting, you addressed this issue specifically in the context of a petition, prospective, likely a future applicant submitted the petition under ARS 41-1001.02 for interpretation of the statutes. And where that matter was left was that the board determined that as of that point in time, that applicant would be responsible for, or prospective applicant would be responsible for achieving a passing score on the ECPP Part 2 by virtue of the fact that she would be applying for her unrestricted license after November 1 of 2020. However, the board asked the petitioner to waive the 30-day response requirement so that the board could revisit this issue in a broader sense beyond the parameters of the petition. And so that's why that is on, this matter is on the agenda for you to consider and discuss today.
Excellent. Thank you. Do we have any comments related to this matter?
And Madam Chair, I had anticipated that the petitioner understands, you know, where this matter is, you know, in terms of the proceedings. She had indicated to me that she would be here today, but I do not see her. And I don't know that she has, that she would request to, you know, if she intended to speak to this or not. But I guess if she attends, then, you know, we can decide if she has standing to speak to the board.
Ms. Pekonen, excuse me, Madam Chair, the board, can you all hear me? This is Dr. Blake.
Yes, Dr. Blake. So you are present today.
I am. Sorry. I don't have a video access, but I am on the call.
Perfect. Thank you for announcing yourself and letting us know you're here. Does the board members have any preference on if they want to hear further from Dr. Blake, or would we like to just discuss the matter? I know, Dr. Meyer, you had some thoughts on related to this matter, and I wanted to see if you wanted to lead us off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to cause additional headaches with Ms. Galvin. I understand the legal aspect of this. I would still like to say that we set an arbitrary date of when the ECPP Part 2 came into play as November 1st, 2020. And if my understanding is that we could have set that differently and or had some nuance to that. We did not think about, and this was an error on my part, that we did not think about how this affects temporary license holders. But I would like to extend the deadline for, requiring the ECPP Part 2, for those current temporary license holders, and set that deadline once, after all of the current, temporary licenses, expire. We don't change anything for someone applying for a current license from start, and it doesn't affect anybody that is applying now since November 1st of 2020 for a temporary license. It's only those prior to November 2020 that had a temporary license that this would affect, and that we extend the requirement for ECPP Part 2, they are not required to take ECPP Part 2 if they have that temporary license prior to November 1st, 2020. That makes sense.
Ms. Shreve, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't, because I just don't think we thought about it.
you know, I think that it was just an oversight. So is that an, is it in our purview to do that, Ms. Galvin? Can we make that distinction that it was an oversight and then change it with a vote of the board?
If you would care to receive legal advice, we could go into executive session.
I would make a motion for legal advice.
And I would second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Let me just make sure everybody's back. Dr. Meyer.
So I think that I don't see a way to make an exception for the temporary license, especially when reapplications have to move over to the new requirements. Since a temporary license is separate from the full license, then once they apply for that, they should have to follow the same requirements. So I give up.
I would also like to add to that, Dr. Meyer and other board members, that each of these individuals were also provided a letter, and the letter is pretty clear as to the requirements that they would have to meet, the licensing requirements at the time of application. So I think that even if there were avenues that maybe kind of got lumped into this unintentionally or what have you, the due diligence of informing the individuals was completed by board staff. And I think that they were made aware that this would be the case. It's unfortunate, but I think we also have to look at, I mean, this is applicable to everybody, whether they're a student working through the process and there's a statutory change, or there's not a lot of wiggle room here. But I think I when I go back to that letter, I think that helps me with kind of putting the issue to rest, because they were notified at that time. So,
well, but that letter said they just had to do the ECCC Part 1 to some people.
But the letter clearly said that they would have to meet the requirements of licensure at the time they applied. Yeah. And so, I mean, the hard part is predicting what those requirements would be, because if they applied a month from now, you know, versus a year from now, there could be statute changes there. You know, we think about things like universal recognition and things that like came through that are completely outside of our jurisdiction. They would still have to follow any of those, any new requirements. And I think that's the piece for me. We wouldn't have been able to prescribe it because we wouldn't know exactly when they were going to test and what requirements would be set at that time, but they were still notified that at point of application, you will be required to meet all of those current statutes. Other thoughts?
Madam Chair, I want to remind the board that one course of action that the board was steering toward before taking the action that I described earlier was, of course, you know, to respond to Dr. Blake's petition, but then also to send a letter of clarification more general to the 25 individuals that Ms. Folks had identified that would benefit from having this clarity. So if that's the direction the board would like us to take, we're prepared to do that.
I think that's a good idea.
I agree. Do we need a motion for that, Ms. Galvin?
You can direct staff. And Heidi, just to make sure I'm clear, in the previous meeting, the board essentially ruled on Dr. Blake's petition. So we do not need to go back and revisit that. Following this meeting, you will draft that letter to her regarding the board's decision on her petition, and then we can draft a letter to the other temporary license holders.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you. All right, then I suppose we will direct board staff to provide those letters, and there is consensus on, from the board members on that matter. I'm looking to see if the 12 o'clock attendees have joined us, but perhaps while they, let's go ahead and give them a moment and move to agenda item number 19.
Madam Chair, we are here.
Oh, excellent. Perfect. Then let's go ahead and go up to agenda item number 9. Thank you guys for...
Madam Chair, should we take a comfort break?
Thank you. Yeah, like a 5 or some comfort break, please.
Yeah, I
second that.
Yeah, let's do 10 minutes, so 12:10. We'll do a comfort break and everybody will resume right at 12:10. Thank you.
Are we going to be done pretty soon after that, based on the agenda?
Yes, we have this matter and one other, and then we will complete the agenda.
And Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I'm going to go ahead and get the next CE code word. The next CE code word is fireworks. Fireworks.
I'm almost inclined. Is there any way we could go through those two items and just be done rather than...
Yeah. I think Ms. Galvin has already stepped away.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Is if everybody can get back earlier, then we can
start. 10 minutes is fine because the people heard that. So that's fine.
12:10. Okay. Thank you. Just checking if Dr. Malott.
Yeah.
Perfect. And Mr. Diner, you've returned as well.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm here.
Excellent. Dr. Davey. We still have a quorum. We can have him join us. All right. We are on agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the application for ECPP, only including review of the postdoctoral written training plan from John M. Japluski. Dr. Meyer, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could we get a pronunciation from the applicant of his last name?
It's Dr. Chaplesky. To make it easier for everyone, Dr. C is perfectly fine with me.
I'm going with Dr. C. Thank you, sir. Okay.
Far off, Dr. Meyer.
What's that? You were
that far off.
I know, you did great.
Thank you.
Well, this isn't the first time I've asked for his pronunciation and I still can't do it. So Dr. C applied for licensure, submitted his application. At the application review committee, there were questions about his postdoctoral supervision plan. And he was asked to clarify what looked like two different locations and supervision contracts. So he submitted a supervision contract signed by Josh Smith, who is not a licensed psychologist, but rather a certified school psychologist, and who had previously applied for licensure with the Board of Psychology, but had not passed the ECPP. And this contract was to be working at Horizon from August 2020 to July 2022, full-time, 40 hours per week. There was also indication that he was working at Arizona Neuropsychology Center, where it seems that Josh Smith also works, but that Dr. C would be getting supervised by Dr. Mather. And this was a supervision contract that ran from August 2020 to July 2021, again for 40 hours per week. Full-time employment. So upon request for additional information, Dr. C did respond and indicated that the supervision contract from Dr. Smith was in order to obtain hours for certification as a school psychologist, but it was his work under Dr. Mather at Arizona Neuropsychology Center that he was submitting for licensure as a psychologist. Dr. C and Dr. Mather submitted a new postdoctoral supervision agreement and employment for the work at Arizona Neuropsychology Center. This application was forwarded to the board to discuss whether this application should be approved and kind of look at the two different supervision plans and places of employment and determine if we can proceed with approval of the application. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you. Dr. C, if you would take a moment to introduce yourself, and you're welcome to make any statement to the board at this time.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. John Chaplesky. I'm currently a postdoc resident being supervised by Dr. John Mather. I've worked with Dr. John since I finished my internship at the end of last July, and have worked with John as my primary supervisor beginning in early August of last year. Over the last year or so, I've accrued hours with Dr. Mather as my supervisor. To this point, I've accrued roughly around 1,200 hours working with Dr. Mather. And my intention and my my intention with, you know, turning in this postdoc training agreement is to be approved to UPPP.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the applicant? Dr. Catarino.
Okay, Dr. C, but I'm also Dr. C, but anyway, Dr. C, I wanted to, in the first document with Dr. Smith, I think you were working at Horizon, and now you're working at the Arizona Neuropsychological Service. So how, where exactly are you working?
I work at Arizona Neuropsychology Centers.
So how did the initial documentation with Dr. Smith, you know, indicate this Horizon location?
Arizona Neuropsychology Center and Horizon, those two businesses are within the same building. One of them is owned by Dr. Smith. The other is owned by Dr. Mather. I'm employed by Arizona Neuropsychology Centers.
Were you at any time working at Horizon as a postdoc at all?
No.
How would Dr. Smith have supervised you?
My relationship with Dr. Smith was, he was my on-site supervisor for if any concerns were brought up while I was working in the school system.
How much percent of your time do you spend working in a school?
Hard to say. I really can't come up with a number for that. I'm not sure.
And the school is a charter school that you worked with? Or do you go to different, have you been in different schools or one charter school?
It was at one charter school, yes.
Okay. Okay, I'll come back maybe later. But, you know, we did clarify now that it's up to 2021, not 2022. Right? I think the initial document said the postdoc would be ending in 2021 now. Okay. I wonder, Dr. Mather does keep notes of the supervision that you meet with him every week for 2 hours? Is there a record of the supervision meetings?
Yes, there is.
I don't know if legally we're allowed to see those. Maybe Ms. Galvin knows.
The board has requested supervision logs in the past in other cases.
Okay. That's all I have for now, but I may come back. Thank you.
Any additional questions for Dr. C? Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. C, could you... Horizon and AZ Neuropsych Center are in the same building. And do you work for both?
I'm completing my postdoctoral residency under Dr. Mather, who owns Arizona Neuropsych Centers.
Have you done any work for Horizon?
Maybe I'll jump in with just some clarification, if that's okay.
That'd be great.
With the board? Okay. So here was the scenario in general terms. So Dr. Smith was supervising, was working with the charter school where John was doing a lot of his clinical, or a lot of his, some of his school psychology work. So in terms of the hierarchy of supervision, I am John's, Dr. C's primary supervisor. He was getting unbelievably amazing experiences working as a in the school setting. As those of you that have worked in the schools, you know that it's an unbelievable opportunity to get a diverse range of experiences with an amazing population. So he was doing a good portion of his work there, which I always had direct supervision over, and he was also working here at the private practice for a couple of days a week as well. So the setting, the way we set up the postdoctoral arrangement was that they knew, the school knew, the administration and staff there knew, all parents had were fully informed that on site, Dr. C was being supervised by the field supervisor, who is Dr. Smith, who's a multi-credentialed school psychologist, but that the overarching level of clinical supervision was mine. And so we would, even though he was on site and Dr. Smith was there, which I felt was ideal because they had a school psychologist right then and there, and he attended all the meetings with him, we still discussed those clinical cases throughout our group and one-to-one face-to-face supervision. So it is a little nebulous, I get that, but ultimately I am John's, 100% John's clinical supervisor, Dr. C's.
I do have this other question though. I looked up that Horizon site and they're performing psychological evaluations. And I don't understand if Dr. Smith is not licensed, how he can do that. But have you done that at the Horizon office building, conformed psychological evaluations? John, Dr. C.
Not through Horizon. Any of my evaluations I performed in the clinical sense was supervised or authorized or signed by Dr. Mather.
And physically, where were they held, those evaluations, in the Horizon suite or in the neuropsychological suite?
Well, they're the same building.
Well, right, but there's must be a different door or sign on the door, right? No? Okay. So it's not only the same building, the same offices. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
And so how many hours per week do you work, Dr. C?
It varied, no more than 40, but sometimes for on slower weeks, it'd be closer to like 30, 35, but it never went over 40.
Okay. All right, I think those are all my questions. Thank you.
Do we have additional questions for Dr. C? All right, we're going to take a moment as well to introduce Dr. Mather. Dr. Mather, if you would please introduce yourself and state your name and any information you'd like to share with the board, now would be a good time to do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dr. John Mather. And I don't really have a whole lot to add. I mean, I get that the clerical error that was initially that generated this concern, I totally get where that was well-founded, but I'm hoping that with that level of clarification that I provided, that it sort of makes sense. I know it is it's a little bit nebulous, and sometimes in these postdoctoral days that we have to get a little bit creative, and I try to do that. And I wanted to provide Dr. C, who, by the way, is going to make an excellent addition to the wonderful Arizona psychological community at some point. But I just wanted to give him a robust training opportunity, and I really felt like the fact that he was able to work in the schools under my supervision and also to do the private realm really sort of made it an ideal, frankly, postdoctoral experience. As many of you know, it in the private realm, sometimes your patients are limited in terms of the demographics, to be quite honest with you. And this provided Dr. Chaplesky an amazing opportunity to get wonderful experience. And you know, and ultimately, I think his goal is to be dual credentialed, and we won't have to go down that path. But I absolutely encourage that from him, because I think it's a really important credential to hold. So if there's any other points of clarification I can offer, I'm certainly happy to do that.
I have just one more. Now, those reports that were done at the charter school or for Horizon patients, would you say, did you sign those?
So, Dr. Catarino, as you know, I know you've done some work in the schools as well. What happens, and I know this issue was brought up last time, so I'm very glad you raised it, because I did want to address it. In the context of a school evaluation, it's called a multidisciplinary evaluation team. And what ends up happening in that context, and parents are aware of this, they're informed of the process, who John is at all levels. But what happens in that context, it's not a separate psychological evaluation. It's done in a multidisciplinary context. So there isn't a report generated by John that's given to parents. It is typed into a virtual platform where we would review what he had done. And then at the end of the meeting, the team reviews it with Dr. C, Dr. Smith, and myself, if ever needed. The team, including the parents, review that in totality, and then they sign the agreement related to eligibility, if there is such an eligibility in educational terms. So I did not physically sign any of the documents, because I didn't attend a lot of those meetings. So therefore, there was no opportunity for me to sign them. But we did thoroughly go through each one. And parents were fully informed of the hierarchical structure of the supervision, as was the administration at all levels. So I just wanted to clear that up.
Well, I had two thoughts on that, because there are still many districts that they do write an individual psychoeducational report. Now, it's not always loaded on the platform, but there's also a place to sign the committee members. And I wonder if could you have signed somewhere that indicated that you were the supervisor? Did it ever appear on any of the MDC paperwork that you were the supervisor? Or did, you know, nowhere, I guess?
Well, frankly, yeah, no, there was no opportunity or area for me to sign.
You can always add a line, but okay.
I could have, yeah, but that wasn't the desire of the school. We went through extensively kind of how it would look, how the administration was fully informed as the hierarchical structure of the supervision. And, you know, we kind of deferred to them in terms of how do you want us to interact with parents in terms of informed consent and participation. And it was their desire that we adhered to the methods we did, knowing that Dr. C was fully, under my wing, so to speak. So,
but how would parents know that you were supervising him?
They were given verbal informed consent. Correct. Yes.
But if they forgot your name, they would be. They don't. I mean, they there's nowhere was it written for parents.
Well, the administrators also obviously were fully informed and aware of the hierarchical structure of the supervision. So if a complaint, and thank goodness it didn't arise, so we never got to that point because he's a fine clinician. But had an issue arisen, it would have been a very smooth process to reach me. Absolutely, there wouldn't have been any difficulties for a parent to number one, they knew, and number two, they could have reached me had there been any issues at any point.
Also, by you not signing, it doesn't show the parents or this board that you took full responsibility for whatever testing he completed at the school, because in no place was it written that you did.
Is that a requirement for?
I think every other reports we look at, or postdocs or interns, usually have a supervisor's name on it. So okay, anybody else have a question?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Mayer, sorry.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up question. Dr. Mather, what's your relationship with Horizon, and do you provide supervision of Dr. Smith?
This is where it gets nebulous. So Dr. Smith is a fully credentialed school psychologist. So he has a separate business that I have no, and he's fully credentialed to do psychoeducational evaluations. He's nationally credentialed, state credentialed. So he has his own company that he began before. I don't know when the company began, but so he was the one that was fundamentally contracted with this charter school. So I did 2 years of supervision with him, and that ended after he did not pass the ECCC for the second time. We ended it. We rearranged our agreement to become him to become an employee essentially, and I would supervise him that way. So again, I know it's a little bit nebulous, but ultimately everything is very much above board. We always gave families full informed consent over everything in terms of who was who and what their role was and what they were to do and how to reach individuals if they needed to go to climb the ladder of supervision. So, I don't know if that answers your question. Dr. Mayer probably brings up more, but.
Yeah, it's just hard to kind of figure this out. And if I'm having trouble figuring it out, I can't imagine on what the public would go through. So I saw that on some of your paperwork, Dr. Smith is listed under Arizona Neuropsychology Center, correct?
Correct, yes.
And you own Arizona Neuropsychology Center?
That is correct, yes.
And so Dr. Smith works for you there, but then there's also a separate business entity, Horizon, that's owned by Dr. Smith. And are you employed by Horizon?
No, sir, not at all.
So do you have any oversight of work that is done by Dr. Smith under the Horizon business?
Not when he's operating under Horizon, independent of Arizona Neuropsychological Centers, no.
Dr. Mayer, I would like to make a motion that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Do we have any additional questions, Dr. Mayer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Dr. C, so I just want to make sure I've got everything clear. Have you ever worked for Horizon?
No, I have not.
Okay. So when you previously said that you signed a supervision contract with Dr. Smith saying that was being done at Horizon, explain that if you never worked at Horizon. Why was Horizon mentioned and a contract signed with him?
So that contract was signed at the time that it was understood that Dr. Smith was going to pass his ECCC and be licensed. And so after he didn't pass that, that's when the confusion came up. That contract was kind of null and void, really. Once we understood that, he didn't meet criteria to be my supervisor. And so that's why that's why I had the error of submitting the Horizon contract, which was an error on my part, and I take responsibility for that. The contract, the right contract, the postdoc training agreement that I should have sent was with Dr. Mather under Arizona Neuropsych Centers.
What is the date of that post supervision agreement? It's not dated.
The Arizona Neuropsych Center's agreement it was from August 2001 to the end of July 2022.
It's just the agreement itself is not dated. Dr. Mather, if I could ask, do you have access to Horizon academic records of the students that Dr. C sees, treats, examines? Do you have independent access to those records?
I have access to anything and everything where I'm supervising Dr. C, yes.
And do you have an agreement with Horizon that articulates the scope of your access to those records?
I'm not totally certain of the question, and I'm going to be honest with you guys. I want to preface this with this. I take my job very seriously. I love what I do. I love the families I work with. I'm blessed to be able to do what I do. I take my ethics very, very seriously. I take my practice very seriously. That being said, I'm getting a little nervous here with respect to some of the questioning. I feel like I probably need to consult with a counsel before I answer any more questions.
So,
this is a criminal proceeding.
What's that?
This is not a criminal proceeding.
I understand that, but I feel like, you know, it's almost like I'm responding to a complaint or something, and I certainly, you know, again, I just want to articulate to the board, to all the esteemed members of the board, I take my job very, very seriously. I'm incredibly nervous right now because I certainly have never tried to do anything unethical on any level at any point. And I wanted to provide Dr. C with an amazing clinical experience, which I think he has. I think the fact that he worked on site, because let's be honest, there's lots of postdoctoral sites that are on school 100% of the time on a school campus. Now, they have a licensed psychologist potentially there a good portion of the time, but this was no different. I mean, I had full access to anything and everything that Dr. C does clinically in my practice, as well as what anything he was doing on the school campus. So, I don't know how else to provide the clarification that the board is seeking. You know, I'm hoping that for Dr. C's sake, we can resolve the fact that he was under my supervision. The entirety of his training, that initial submittal was fundamentally a clerical error, something that I think it was an edit replace kind of thing where he just didn't put the right names in, to be totally honest with you, but I'll let him speak to that. But again, I don't want to, I'm just concerned that this is at the direction this is heading, and I just want to make sure I'm protecting myself as a you know, member of the psychological community that takes my job very seriously.
Thank you, Dr. Mather. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Dr. Mather, I appreciate your concern. As we're trying to figure out the records involved in Dr. C's application, it's not clear. The supervisory oversight is unclear. And that's what we need to get to the bottom of to be able to move forward. So I think that if you don't feel comfortable answering any other questions, we can kind of move on. I just don't feel like I understand what that supervision setup is. It's not clearly outlined.
Sorry, Dr. Mara. If I may, I'll try one more time here. I understand it's nebulous and I get it. So let me try one more time.
Let me ask a question. And if you don't want to answer, that's fine. Okay. My understanding is the contract with the charter school is through Horizon. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
And so for you to have access to those records, wouldn't there have to be some kind of agreement between you and Horizon, or you directly with the school, to have access to any records and any work being done at the charter school?
Yes, and there absolutely was an agreement there, 100%.
There, there's an agreement signed between you and Horizon?
There's an agreement signed between myself and the school in relation to having access to those records, yes.
Okay. So thank you. I don't have any other questions.
I just have one more. So Dr. C, when you submitted your application to be a certified school psychologist to the Department of Education, have you done that?
No, I haven't begun that process at all. That was something that I was a future goal that maybe I'll go after in the future. But to this point, I have not submitted that. I haven't made any sort of application or begun any application towards becoming a certified school psychologist. That's, like I said, not something I'm doing at the current time.
And then I want to clarify again, the office space for Horizon and for Arizona Neuropsychological, they are the exact same offices? Okay, thank you.
Was that a yes? I just saw a nod.
It was indeed a yes.
And just to confirm, you do have a written agreement between you and the school to look at the information or documents regarding C's at work.
I do, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any further questions for Dr. Mather?
Yes, one more. So there was, according to the website for that Horizon, there are also testing done in their offices. Did you do any testing not at the school for their offices, Dr. C?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Did you do any testing in the Horizon suite under the auspices of Horizon, but not at the school, but in the office?
Any of the work that I'd done in the private sector was under Dr. John Mather.
Okay.
That's Arizona Neuropsych Centers.
Okay.
I just have one follow-up question. I'm just trying to clarify. On page 11 of our documentation, Horizon's address is listed on North Arizona Avenue. And it's on letterhead. And on your letterhead for the Neuropsych Centers, the address is listed on 2500 South Power Road.
So we co-occupied the suite on Arizona Avenue, and then 2 years ago moved to this suite. So we are in the same location. We were then, that was just our old address. That was ANC's old address. And Horizons operated in the same building throughout the last, however, since that time.
So what's the current address of Arizona Neuropsychology Center?
2500 North Power.
Okay, so that's what's on the current, the most recent supervision contract.
Yes, under ANC.
Is it on there?
Yeah, right there.
Okay.
Okay, do we have any additional questions? Hearing none. We do need to determine as a board what steps we would like to take. Dr. Meyer.
So I can see this one of two ways. One is that Dr. C was planning to work under Dr. Smith, and then Dr. Smith didn't pass the ECPP and couldn't be licensed. Okay, now that I say that out loud, don't you have to be licensed for a year to supervise?
I think it was 2 years for postdoc.
So anyway, either things fell through and that didn't work, so scramble to set up supervision with Dr. Mather.
Can I clarify real quick, Dr. Meyer? I'm really sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So ultimately, Dr. C was going to work under me either way. You have to be licensed for 2 years. It's my understanding anyway. I don't know that that's the case. You have to be licensed for 2 years to do it. So really the only issue from a clerical standpoint was it was in relation to eventually Dr. C was going to go after Department of Education certification for school psychology for certification. So we sat in here in July and we agreed, this is 2020, that I was going to be his. So it wasn't a situation where he failed a test and so therefore the situation fell through. I was always going to be Dr. C's supervisor because I'm the only one that's been licensed for 2 years. So that error was simply in relation to the Department of Education and looking forward to that. So he should have, Dr. C, frankly, should have submitted what we had in place right. The first time. And then there wouldn't be these questions being raised. But
why was that contract ever even signed with Dr. Smith then?
Like I said, the initial goal was that, you know, that into the future, my initial goal was I wanted to be a licensed clinical psychologist. But as far as, you know, if I ever chose to apply for to become a certified school psychologist, I would have had supervision from or work with a school psychologist. And again, that's not something that I was for sure going to go after or didn't know if I would meet the requirements to become a certified school psychologist. But if that ever came up where I need to prove that I had training under a certified school psychologist, I would then submit that application, you know, submit.
Well, but Dr. Mather, aren't you a school psychologist also?
I worked as a school psychologist for a very long time. Yes, I'm not credentialed as such through the state anymore, but absolutely I worked for many, many years as a school psychologist.
Okay, but I mean, you can't have a supervision contract just in case you want to come back and use it later. All right. Thank you for trying to provide additional clarification. I think next step is to request documentation of supervision records and supervision log, as well as any documentation that demonstrates that Dr. Mather had access to records to provide oversight for all of Dr. C's work. And the Dr. Smith stuff can be on a separate side. And once we look at that, we can then figure out how to proceed.
Dr. Malott?
Yeah, so I think I'm trying to, you know, wrap my brain around all the different things that were said. And this is not the first time, you know, this is for this board. And when somebody, and I'm going to use an analogy here, when somebody is doing a postdoc and say they want to get certified by the board of certified neuropsychologists, you know, they're pursuing those hours as well as the same time that they're doing their postdoc supervision for licensed psychologists in Arizona. We've seen that. So then students, after they complete the 2 years for the board certification neuropsychologist, they're collecting those hours. They're also collecting hours to become licensed as a board. Right. I think Dr. C was hoping to also get certified as a certified school psychologist. He had a contract. He was hoping so Dr. Mather would meet that requirement, as well as the, I'm blanking on the other person's name, the other person would meet that requirement. At the same time, because the work overlaps, he was also using the same hours or hoping to use the same hours for his licensed psychologist. And there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You're doing psychological evaluation. Those are appropriate assessment hours. Where I think Dr. C made the mistake was he submitted the wrong contract to the board rather than submitting the psychological supervision contract that he had with Dr. Mather, who was supervising him for his clinical hours for this board. He submitted the previous contract, and therein lies all of this confusion. He was hoping to accumulate hours, and you need 650 hours of clinical work to meet the requirements for school psych certification. You cannot become a certified school psychologist if you don't spend at least 600 hours. Those same hours count towards postdoctoral supervision for licensed psychologists. And I don't know, as I listen to it, and I've seen people who have tried to get both at the same time, you know, you can, both of the experiences count towards both settings, you know. For example, I can do a licensed postdoc, which is what I did try to do, and I gave up at some point, and try to meet the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health for my licensed professional counselor, which counts again for both licenses. So I'm working on my licensed psychologist. I'm also working on my LPC because I know that experience that I'm getting counts. And then I started looking at the supervision requirements, and I have two types of supervisors to make sure I'm meeting all of the supervision requirements of the board. Looks like Dr. Mather had a good relationship with the person in Horizon. Whether the person in Horizon is doing it according to our standards or not is a whole different matter. But Dr. Mathers had a good relationship, so he was allowed, and he had an agreement with the school, he was allowed to be as a supervisor. I really feel that Dr. C, who is applying for, he made a mistake. He submitted the wrong supervision contract that he had on file, and when he was called on it, he submitted the other one. But he did meet our supervision requirements. He had a licensed psychologist who supervised him in legitimate psychological work. We can ask for the supervision records, but you know, I think by submitting that contract, it just created a whole web of suspicion on a psychologist who's being well trained. And so taking that into contact, he's withdrawing that contract. He did have another supervision agreement, and did he meet our standards for supervised experiences? And then we need to make a determination on that, whether we need to talk to the other school psychologists in terms of practice, you know, that's another matter. That's not agendized right now. And we can move on. But anyway, so I'm just kind of giving you my take on as I'm listening to the matters. So
I guess I agree with everything you said, except you do not need a supervised school, a certified school psychologist to vouch for you for the board of education.
You do not. A licensed psychologist will count. That is correct. But I am not sure that reasoning. But I don't know. Dr. Mather, did I, what I say gets close to kind of explaining the situation?
Dr. Millett, you couldn't put it any better. I appreciate that I'm having a hard time articulating. I'm a bit nervous here, but that's exactly what happened. It was fundamentally, almost literally, an edit replace error, and the wrong form got sent. And so he's had a very robust, very meaningful clinical experience under my direct supervision the entirety of his year here. And so as it relates to him, I know there may be other matters, but as it relates to Dr. C, I would, you know, hope that the board sees that he's met the requirement, in my opinion, obviously, but he's met the requirement to sit for the ECCC, and I think you put it splendidly, and I appreciate you doing so.
Ms. Shreve.
I agree with Dr. Millett. I think it's admirable. You start out with these big high hopes. You're going to go both directions. Things didn't work out. You know, you submitted the wrong document. I think a lot of good questions have been asked. I think they've been answered. And I, you know, if he's met the requirements for us, I don't see a problem.
Dr. Mayer.
So I also counted the same hours to multiple credentials. There's no problem with that. You also don't need separate supervision contracts a licensed psychologist counts for the supervision for those. There was no need. And so when you start seeing completely separate contracts, that does bring it into question. And then when we're seeing other potential issues, it brings things into question. And so there's no reason. I don't want to question Dr. Mather's supervision and the setup. And so I think that seeing supervision records that are consistent with what they've shared, and access to records which would be required to provide that supervision and oversight answers the questions, and we can move on to approve for to take the ERPP. But just because there's been questions, I'd like to see that additional documentation that should be an easy thing to submit.
I agree.
Do we have any further discussion? Do we have a motion on the table?
So I would make a motion to, well, can we do this through the application review committee? Or do we want
to just come back to the board? I mean, maybe the supervision records and that agreement with the school.
So I would make a motion to request additional information from Dr. C that includes supervision documentation and supervision logs and confirmation of Dr. Mather's access contract with the school.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do we need a roll call vote for this, Ms. Galvin?
You don't need a roll call vote unless you feel that it would be too close, but I think we can do it on voice.
All right, let's go ahead and do just a voice vote. All in favor, please indicate so by indicating aye.
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 Any opposed?
Me.
So one in opposition, Ms. Shreve.
The motion does carry. Board staff will provide you guys with a list of the documentation that we will be looking for, and then you can resubmit that. And hopefully we can get this on the August agenda so we can put the issue to rest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
All right, we will look to agenda item number 19, discussion, consideration, possible action on resuming in-person meetings. Ms. Pakanon, will you please provide us an overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. The board asked for this matter to be placed on your agenda for purposes of deciding how and what format you want to meet going forward. I provided a little bit of information relative to some, you know, considerations that might need to be made. We do have to acknowledge that there is a fiscal impact if we resume meeting in person. So I just need to know at what level we're going to do that so I can budget accordingly. A little bit more challenging, but not a showstopper, if you will. We've talked about meeting in, I guess, a hybrid fashion. So some members electing to meet in person while others join the meeting remotely. That is something that I need to spend a little bit more time investigating and also testing, investigating from the perspective of, do we have the equipment in the meeting rooms and specifically the meeting rooms that we are booked in, which we compete with other boards for that space. So I would need to ascertain, you know, do we have the technology to facilitate a hybrid meeting? And also, I really need to test it and see how effective it would be, how reliable it would be, because if we were to have, you know, a certain number of our members participating remotely and the remote connection or the equipment somehow failed, then, you know, the meeting would likely couldn't happen due to lack of a quorum. So those are the kinds of things that I just sort of wanted to, you know, the board to think about and be aware of as you're having this conversation. I do think that this platform Zoom can continue to successfully facilitate much of the board's work, particularly at the committee level. We have every intention of maintaining our subscription to the service. It's inexpensive, and at least for purposes of the CBA, I'm sure they want to continue meeting by Zoom. And, you know, ARC made a successful transition from telephonic meetings exclusively to Zoom. So Zoom will always be available, I believe, to this board. So again, those are some of the the considerations that I wanted you to have as you have this conversation. And I'm happy to answer any questions, particularly if anything that I mentioned is unclear.
Could I add something? We have had lots of experiences with, Zoom meetings prior to the pandemic. And we always had at least 10 to 15%, you know, a large contingent, about 20, and maybe even 20 to 25% on Zoom. And then the rest of us were in the room, and the 25% that were on Zoom always felt left out. We would forget that they were there. They'd be like, hey, hey, and raise their hands because the room dominated the conversation. So having said that, you know, I hope we do return to board meetings. We may have people on occasion, you know, I remember Dr. Bahansky being in China and joining us. Mr. Dinar may have similar, where he may be elsewhere. I'm imagining, I don't know that for sure, but, you know, or I might be traveling and be in India and want to join the meeting. But those are, you know, it gets really challenging. I think our audience may want to join by Zoom, so having that option is good. But for deliberation purposes, at least from the board standpoint, you know, it's nice to have as many people as possible if we are having a truly in-person meeting. That's just my personal preference, though, stating. But hopefully few of those, maybe three a year or something.
Ms. Shree?
I like the Zoom meetings. I'm not having to drive downtown. I really prefer Zoom. And I think we've all kind of gotten a groove with it. But my preference would be Zoom if we were to decide, unless we felt there needed to be a schedule where, you know, once a quarter we meet together or something. But I think Zoom has worked.
I agree.
Dr. Meyer.
The one thing that it has seemed like has happened is there's been this creep where we used to meet in person every other month and then we'd have a brief phone meeting. Now we tend to have full day meetings every month. And I think in part we've had more things to deal with, but I also think that there's been this creep where there are things that we could be a bit more efficient and quicker and move through it. And so perhaps if we could try to go back to some form of, whether it's quarterly meetings or in person and three quarters on Zoom, or back to in person and then on Zoom, something. But I do feel like we're spending more and more time in meetings, and I'm sick of meetings.
And Dr. Meyer, to that point, I think part of it is that we're seeing more, but I think part of what would happen before, and this might just be feedback for board staff as they, you know, think of a way to propose this, is that there were items that were like intentionally held for the in-person meeting. So it was like, hey, let's just go ahead and schedule this for the in-person. And so even if there was a way to, I'm like you, kind of get back into the longer meetings,
mm-hmm.
you know, every other month, and then the shorter meetings, I still think that could be done in a lot of ways via Zoom. I also like avoiding going downtown. I definitely think like the committees via Zoom is super productive. I can't figure out if I miss seeing everybody in person or if I miss cake, but that we will only know the truth of that till it, when we actually get in person and realize there is no cake.
I will make the cake.
Okay, I will try making a rum cake if that gets us back.
I have Jan's recipe. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
I'll defer to Dr. Moore.
If there's cake, even if it's quarterly or something, I agree. I do like seeing people, but I agree with Ms. Shreves. I really also like mm-hmm. how efficient these meetings can be. And I think even like I enjoyed having the students on today. I was letting Heidi know it was a little bit hard because they ended up with the video. I was unable to see everybody because I was having to toggle between both sides to see if any board members were raising their hands. But aside from that, like I feel like there's still some really effective ways to engage the public more efficiently than just having like them call in, like, I know for the behavior analyst, there's been a lot of professional association representation. And so having them call into all of the, to the in-person ones might be difficult. But I do miss seeing everybody too. So it's kind of a, but if I had a preference, it would probably be Zoom.
I do agree with the length of the meetings. We used to have them in the morning for an hour. I mean, it's just, and I'm not sure, you know, I mean, I think we gotta look at what we really need to be updated on, if it's the same thing as the last month. I mean, it just seems like they've gone, and I agree with Dr. Myers, they've creeped. And again, we've had a lot going on with COVID, but it's not even necessarily the discipline issues. It's, I don't know. I think we just need to look at that.
The other thing is, you know, kind of going to a quarterly, I think the one disadvantage I do feel, and that is the people, our complainants, you know, who the person who's been complaining, it's sometimes really hard to get a read. And I know when I'm interviewing faculty candidates, and we did it all on Zoom, and then we hire, it's just a whole different dynamic that we've just missed. Same thing with, you know, we did admissions interviews, you know, that we've done so much on Zoom, and I don't know, the dynamics change a little bit.
Well, absolutely. Like, I mean, we wouldn't notice, except for a brief view, that Dr. Davey doesn't dress professionally. He's wearing shorts right now. And I mean, we'd miss out on that if.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Person. You know what? I'm actually going to, when we go back in person, only wear shorts.
There you go.
I've gone from polos to fancy t-shirts, which means it doesn't.
As long as they're creased.
I mean, they're quote unquote golf shorts. I would shorts.
We just got off track. So I make a motion that we try to shorten some of the meetings.
Yeah. Second.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that as the discussion.
What I'd like to say is I like the idea of quarterly or semi-annual meetings that are face-to-face. I think that to me, it's a quality issue, and making connections with people directly is important, and it keeps maybe a little camaraderie or a little team spirit going on. Zoom is a little distant, but on the other hand, I like the idea of, you know, having the Zoom meetings, you know, from time to time, and maybe having the, you know, the quarterly meetings where we meet face to face. That's what I would propose.
I think before this, we used to meet quarterly, and then the rest were on phone. Isn't that it, Dr. Millott?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. We used to do every other month, and then we moved to quarterly. Sure. And then I think right around the last couple of years, seemed like it got more often in person. Maybe it moved to every other month. I think when you were president, chair of the board, Mishri. So
I think, no, I was during COVID. It was all in person.
Oh, okay. So right before that, it kind of, the frequency suddenly increased.
We need to.
And I think our agenda has expanded, you know. I think having two licenses in the same board, and maybe that all has increased. But some happy meetings. One other thing that has helped, almost all of you on this board, I've met you in person. And to me, that has really helped maintain the relationship. I find that if you know somebody in person and then move to Zoom, there's less of that need to. You know, I know how Dr. Davies looks like outside of here. So, you know, Zoom. So that has helped. But if you start getting brand new board members, it'd be really hard to make those connections, and brand new staff. And we know we have now a new staff member, and, you know, we haven't met her. It's hard to get us. My God, that's a big baby.
Madam Chair?
You're feeding her. So.
Madam Chair?
Board, yes, Ms. Bikes.
Just a clerical thing that the staff has discovered today is that with these Zoom meetings, you can take your mouse and drag the boxes in the order you want them.
You can pin it. Pin it. It's called pin.
Well, not just the pin. You can literally drag the boxes so that everybody.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh, you can.
I didn't know that.
That would have helped tremendously earlier.
And I know you can pin people and then they show up on the top screen.
Yep.
I put Dr. Meyer on his own page.
Madam Chair, I'm going to go ahead and give out the last CE code word for the meeting.
I put myself on that page too.
The last CE code word is hot dogs. Hot dogs.
Excellent. All right. So, Ms. Pakenham, does that give you some direction then on what you were looking for, or we're just going to maybe revisit it?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think so. Do we want to have a target in mind? For example, the November meeting will be our next in-person meeting. Just sort of for planning purposes, it would help staff kind of, you know, anticipate that. And I hope we remember how to set up for a meeting. We probably need to do a dress rehearsal just to prove to ourselves we still know what to do. But maybe setting that target would be helpful. And, you know, again, I alluded to this earlier. There's so much competition for the meeting space in our buildings. I get requests from other boards with some frequency indicating, you know, hey, we know your board is still meeting by Zoom. Can you release the room that you've booked to us? So that way I can honor some of those requests.
November is great. October wouldn't have worked for me, so I appreciate the November suggestion.
All right, I'm getting affirmative signals for November.
I think it also might be helpful to get some feedback from the members on how they feel about the screening committee, if they would like to keep that virtual, if they want to come back in.
Virtual. My vote's Zoom.
Madam Chair, may I speak to the November in person?
All right, I apologize. I had to get someone to grab the baby. All right, so November, so we're going to start with the November.
Meeting. Mr. Diner had a question.
Mr. Diner would like to speak.
Mr. Diner.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So November, the meeting, I think, is close to the Veterans Day long weekend. So it might be, I want to propose that maybe we should consider meeting in person on October instead of November, because if people have vacation plans, we don't want to intrude upon those.
Well, it's on the 5th of November. So the meet, is that not right? It's scheduled for the 5th of November and the Veterans Day weekend is the next weekend. Is that, Dr. Diner, is that your, Mr. Diner, is that your concern?
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough to the long weekend that, you know, people might have vacation plans. So just as a precaution, October might be an option.
I cannot make October. I have a big event at 4 o'clock that day in Flagstaff. And it's always been the case for the last 8 years. So
can we ask maybe, Madam Chair, who can't make the November, if that's an issue, the November meeting for anybody?
Is the November issue, is the November meeting going to be an issue for anybody to make? And there's still, and to clarify too, there will still be a call-in option.
Yeah.
So even if you can't make the in-person, there's still the call-in. So is there anybody who will not be able to make the November? All right. I think the November meeting is probably going to be best. But we appreciate, I think, Mr. Diner, you bring up a really good point, and I'm glad that you brought that to our attention so that we could double check the calendars. Any additional comments? All right, hearing none, we'll move to agenda item number 10. Are there any new agenda items for future meetings?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I just want to go back. We didn't get clarification about the CSC meeting. I know Ms. Shreve had mentioned she was in favor of proceeding with them being held via Zoom, but I wanted to get the consensus.
Yeah, I'm all for that too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Meetings that are 2 or 3 hours, it's not worth traveling for.
And the issue of the complainants or licensees being in person, they still can have that at the full board. I think the initial step, Zoom is fine.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
And Ms. Pakenham, one of the things that we did previously on the board, if the CSC voted to move that meeting to a full committee for review, we would push that to the in-person meeting. That's when we met and reviewed. We didn't do it every month. So we had a chance then as a full board to meet the complainant and the licensee and hear both sides. And then, so that's how we, that's how our meetings were shorter in the in-between periods. We didn't just, oh, today CSC says go. And then, of course, you know what happens to, you know, lawyers or counsel ask for extra time. They need, they keep postponing. I thought, yeah, so.
Madam Chair, thanks, Dr. Malott, for that explanation. Yes, I think that one of the outcomes of the performance audit, when the auditors found that, you know, some of our outlier cases were, you know, extended past the ideal timeframes, that sort of, you know, created some impetus for staff to keep those cases moving forward. Not so much an issue now. Of course, 2020 was a very challenging year, we all know, but we'll keep that in mind too, so that we sort of have this, while being mindful of timeframes, we're also, you know, making sure that those cases come before you to the extent that it's possible in your in-person meetings.
Perfect, thank you. All right, hearing no further discussion, we will move to agenda item number 20. That's gonna be any agenda items for future meetings. All right.
One thing I wanted to ask, maybe if Ms. Pakenon can give us an update, if you have one, if we had anyone take the EPPP2 and how's that going?
Madam Chair, I can gather some information for a future agenda item from PPB for you, yes.
Okay, I'd really like an update on that.
I'd be happy to do that.
Excellent, thank you. All right, any additional agenda items? Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 21, adjournment. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Ms. Sheeve, I like your hair.
Oh, thanks.
A new haircut, yeah.
No, way short.
Mm-hmm. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Meeting is adjourned.